that concludes our city council meeting tonight. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our city council work session this evening. It's in two parts. We had one part out by the fountain where URS presented to the city a check for $25,000 for the statue that's going to be going on out there in the likeness of William Aiken, who was really responsible for us being here tonight and also responsible for the railroad coming through our community. And then his name was used to as a name for the city back in 1835. So this is the second part of our work session. We have with us John Lindsay. John is with the SRR. He will explain that. He's a manager for Area Communications, Savannah River Remediation, LLC. Now, John works with his boss, I guess I might say. Is that right, John? Correct me if I'm wrong. Jim French, who is on his way here. So at some point, Jim should be here also, and he will give us a little talk. I actually talked with Jim and John a couple of months ago at Rotary and asked them if they would be interested in coming to talk just briefly about what they're doing at the site on the remediation projects. So without further ado, John, go ahead, sir.
Mayor Cavanaugh, members of the council, City Manager LeDuc, thank you for the opportunity to join with you this evening. And I expect that Jim will be here shortly, and he'll be able to describe some of the slides that I may not be able to do so. Let's begin. First of all, we wanted the opportunity to spend some time with you to tell you who we are and what we do. You know, there's a lot of confusion as to the various entities that work at the site. There's SRS, there's SRNS, there's SRR, and we'd like the opportunity to at least inform our publics and our citizenry about the role that SRR plays at the Savannah River site. So with that, I'd like to begin.
Savannah River Remediation celebrated its one-year anniversary at the U.S. Savannah River site on July 7th. SRR, as it's known, is the radioactive liquid waste contractor at the Savannah River site, located near Hinkin, South Carolina. U.S. Representative Jay E. Lyburn, keynote speaker for the event, praised SRR for work it's doing to safely disposition the highest risk material in South Carolina.
What you're doing is preparing us, this state and this nation, for what I believe is going to be a nuclear renaissance in this country.
I want to share with you who the members of the Savannah River Remediation Team are, and it is led by URS, pleased to be located right here in Aiken. The other members of the team, the Bechtel National Corporation, CH2M Hill, Babcock and Wilcox Technical Services, and our critical subcontractors are Arriva Energy Solutions and URS Safety Management. And you can see what I was talking about when we were talking about alphabet soup. Let's talk about the safe and secure foundation from which we work at the Savannah River site. And I want to, in the interest of time, direct your attention to the lower right-hand corner of the slide and show you, for instance, what the DOE environmental management average is across the entire complex. First of all, you have industry average, industry across the country, and that's a total recordable case rate of 3.9 per 200,000 hours, I believe that is. The DOE environmental management average across the country is 0.92, and Savannah River remediation's average is 0.28. So SRR is performing well in safety at the site, and we're particularly pleased with those results. Let's take a look next at the facilities that we operate at the site. In the upper left-hand corner, the actinide removal process. The middle slide at the top is the modular caustic side solvent extraction process, the MCU. Then facilities that you may already be familiar with, Saltstone, which processes low-level waste, mixes it with concrete, grout, and stores it in nearby vaults. The tank farms, there are 51 tanks located at the Savannah River site, 22 in what we call the F tank area, tank farm, and 29 in the H tank farm. These are huge underground tanks, most of them with a capacity to hold about 1 million gallons of radioactive liquid waste. They went to construction, began construction rather, in the early 1950s. So many of those facilities are 50, 60 years old. And that tank farm is where we spend virtually all of our time. And then finally, on the lower right-hand corner is the Defense Waste Processing Facility. It's the largest waste processing facility of its kind in the country, and it is the place where we take the liquid waste, mix it with glass, and process it into stainless steel containers for storage at the site. We're pleased to let you know that in the very, near future, we will be processing our 3,000th canister. That's a significant milestone for us. That plant has been operational now since 1996. And appropriately enough, Jim is here now, and this is his favorite slide. And so I'm going to let Jim finish the presentation and explain just exactly what all of those cogs are about.
I apologize to the council and to the public. I was just walking in the door, and Leslie Price called me about 5 minutes ago, and she said, "You're running late." And I said, "I know I'm running late, but are you calling from the Lord's perspective or the city council's perspective?" Probably both. John Lindsay's started the presentation. I'm glad you're here. Thank you so much. I feel like I'm stepping in for another long ball hitter here. This slide actually represents the integration that's necessary to close these tanks. And if you look at the far left side, you'll see high-level waste tank closure, and that gear actually turns with the big blue gear that's called tank cleaning. And tank cleaning actually moves with the brown gear at the top that says first we have to get the waste out. And so there's what we call bulk waste removal. And remembering that the tanks are 1 million gallons apiece, there's a lot of bulk waste that's got to get out of the tank. It goes to something which we call batch sludge prep. And remember that those 3,000 canisters that John just mentioned have to be specifically recipe permitted and approved. So every batch that we make of glass canisters has got to be meet chemical and waste compliance standards. So the sludge batch preparation is just like batching cookies. It's batching barbecue. It's batching to be perfect before it goes into the canisters. Then it's actually, that batch is actually fed to the DWPF canister, and that's the comment that John just made, 3,000 canisters poured today. Saturday, we completed our 246th canister for 2010. That is above goal and in perfect time for us to start an outage at that facility to put in some bubblers, which will enhance the capacity next year up to over 300 canisters. Now, the cogs at the bottom also support tank cleaning. When we use water to clean the tanks, just at the bottom of the screen, you'll see high-level waste evaporators. They're the ones that condense the water that we've used and actually reduce the volume so we can continue to store it. It's connected to something called effluent treatment facility or effluent treatment process, ETP. That's our only permitted outfall to the state of South Carolina. And we cherish that permit very carefully and watch the water that goes to the outfall. Right behind the one that's called tank cleaning is the salt removal and batch prep. I'm trying to read it from a distance, and I'm getting older. What we've got to do, there's 143,000 tons of salt left in those tanks, and the salt, quite frankly, is just like you'd imagine. It's dry, crystalline salt. It's caustic that's been added because of the acid flow sheet with the carbon steel tanks would have corroded the tanks decades ago. But by making it caustic and by adding enough salt or caustic, then we've changed the corrosion rate so those carbon steel tanks are still in good shape. We've got to get the salt out of there. We use ARP and MCU to remove the salt. and we are in the process of supporting the Salt Waste Process Facility startup, which is a huge facility. It'll do about 6 million gallons of salt a year. It's being constructed by Parsons right next to our site, and when it comes online, it'll be the primary salt removal tool to get the tanks cleaned. But that's got to be turned up. Now, outside those gears, you can see the phrases, the, how much faster they have to turn. In bulk waste removal, it's got to go three times as fast, twice as fast in sludge prep, and twice as fast in sludge feed, and up to 400 canisters a year. As I mentioned, we just finished 246 canisters this year, and we're very proud of that. Next year's goal is somewhere around 328 canisters, and then the year after that, it gets up over 400. So it is a complicated contract. It's a lot complicated when you think this is radioactive waste that you can't get close to. It's 12 to 15 feet below grade. Humans can't go there. We do all of our work with remote cameras and remote lights and then remote tools. And we've closed two. It's the only place in South Carolina closing two. We closed, as a contractor, we closed 11 more at Idaho. And it's not that my bulk shape, they call me the tank man, but it's the fact that I was involved in all 13 of those closures as tank closure. So it's not a characteristic of how I look, but what I do. We are pretty good at it. And we've got 22 and 8 to get done here to maintain the risk away from the aquifer at Savannah Riverside and along the river. Next slide. We are proud to have received some recovery scope ARRA money. We got it in September 28th of 2009. We got $200 million, and we targeted that $200 million to successfully fix and promote the closure of those 22 and 8. So the things in the car that we just talked about that we've done a tune-up on the engine, in some cases it needs new tires, in some cases it needs new light bulbs. In some cases, it needs a new windshield, and we're putting all that in with those $22 million, $200 million, specifically in the area of tank closure infrastructure, waste treatment, salt disposition, and facility operations. Remembering that I don't see anybody in the room quite old enough, but 1954 is when they first started putting the tanks in at Savannah Riverside. So they're running past their age limit right now. Next. Our local support has been ongoing and continues to be with the Savannah River Remediation. We're not the contractor that we used to be in size, but we still have a large heart. And 45% of our workforce lives in Aiken County. And in the CSRA, we spent, counting the income of our workers, $150 million in taxes paid by the employees. So we still are a hometown company, and A large portion of us live in Aiken County. Next. You can count on us, I believe, for working safe man hours. We've got 3 million man hours logged. We had an employee who stepped on a AAA battery and turned her ankle, and she had an injury. And so we started our 3 million hours over because of that one injury. And we're up to 1.5 million now on the next run of safe work hours. So the 3 million that's there was a good string. We had a battery that got outside of a beeper. She stepped on it. It's unfortunate, but she hurt her knee. And so now we're on a 1.5 million string. We'll keep that going. We have, as I mentioned, with the support of the ARRA money, we have now 15 tanks in closure. Four are scheduled to be ready for paperwork closure, authorization, and then pouring grout by the end of the month. So in the year that we've been here, we've taken 18 and 19 and tanks 5 and 6 to a readiness state that says they're clean, they're sampled, there's videotape, and now it's up for the four government agencies to agree that we can go ahead and pour grout in. Four agencies being EPA, NRC, DOE, and DHEC in the state of South Carolina. As it says in blue at the bottom of the page, when we started the proposal back in 2007, we had some creative flow sheets and we had some creative changes to be able to tweak this engine to make it run faster. Now we've proven that all aspects of that gear chain will go at that speed. And so the phrase at the bottom says, we're not asking can we do it anymore, but we're just asking how fast can we safely go. And so we've got four ready for closure by the end of this month. That's our logo. That's our tagline. It's remarkable that 22 tanks in this industry at this point in time is going to get closed in 8 years. I can tell you, as a veteran of the industry for 34 years and working at Savannah Riverside for 21 years, that this is truly a remarkable commitment. You won't find it anyplace else at any other site. And these are all million-gallon tanks. These are the largest tanks in the industry. I think there's 182 at Hanford. Whenever I talk with the Hanford general manager, I keep reminding him that there's several thousand tanks you need to close out on the West Coast. And it makes my job feel a little bit easier. And he teases me and says, no, there's only 182. There's not thousands. But they have a larger challenge at Hanford than we have. And I would tell the community that we're farther along than they are. Questions? Was I on time, Roger?
You did great.
All right.
You did great. Question? Anyone have any comments or questions?
Jim, do you want to mention the amount of money saved as a result of the $200 million and you're accelerating the process?
Yeah. What's happened is because we've used the AR money to take care of the infrastructure and try and keep the old facilities renewed and revitalized, and with the department's help to try and figure out how can we put momentum on this. Once you get ahead of steamroll and you want to keep going, you want to keep closing, our current estimate to the Department of Energy says that with the actions that we've taken so far, we will reduce the life cycle, which used to run out to, for salt closure, used to run all the way out to 2030, and it'll bring it back to 2024, so that's a six-year improvement on the life cycle, so that the last tanks at Savannah Riverside would then get closed in 2024, and they would be salt tanks, and they're purely dependent on the salt waste process facility getting up and running at capacity. And that savings of 6 years turns out to save the government over $3 billion. And for the small investment that they've made here, we think that's good payback and good ROI, return on investment. We got to do it. We got to do it safely, but it's a great return on investment. Good question.
Jim, yeah. And just let me say thank you so much for being here, both you and John. And to our audience, and y'all didn't say this, but these gentlemen are not new to the Savannah Riverside. They've been here before. So they've been around, they've had high-level jobs, and they came back and still have high-level jobs.
No, John, and, you and I both went to Idaho. Right? I mean, and I can tell you, at least from my perspective, Idaho's climate is considerably different than South Carolina. I just lived here long enough. I lived here about 20 years, and my wife says that your blood has thinned enough so that now you can just live in the South comfortably. Then when we went to Idaho, she says, well, your blood's too thin for you to live with these cold times. So now I'm back to Savannah River, and I'm back to CSRA, and I'm not sure if my blood is still thick or thin or what have you, but it is enjoyable to be back. Thank you, Chris.
Jim, thank you for being here. John, thanks very much. Very interesting.
Let's see. If I could introduce Jenny Taylor. Jennifer is our communications and marketing expert, and she does a superior job for us in terms of our marketing and communication. So we thank you, Jennifer, for coming.
Thank you.
thank you so much. Thank you, Jenny. You don't have to run off unless you have something else you want to do. Okay, excuse me. That concludes our work session for this evening. And let's see if the scouts can get seated here. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being at our City Council meeting, September 13th, 2010, and we appreciate you being here. And as we go through our agenda, if an item comes up that you would like to speak on, you're certainly welcome to do so. Just let us know that you want to speak, and we'll call on you, and we'd like to have comments from our audience when they're good comments, obviously. But any of your thoughts are always welcome. As we begin our meeting this evening, we will have a council prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
May we pray. Most Heavenly Father, our God of hope, our God of faith, and our God of love, we give thanks to you for your wondrous works and your marvelous deeds. We thank you, O dear Father, for this day, for our health and for our strength and for our families and all of the rich blessings you continue to bestow upon this community, our staff, and the elected council body. Dear Father, create in us a pure heart that will not sin against you. Fill us with knowledge through all of your spiritual wisdom and understanding. Father in heaven, help us to live and work in peace and harmony, and renew our spirit that we may be faithful to you. We ask, dear God, your protection with our military troops, those that are hungry, those that have lost their jobs, and some see no way or no solutions to their problems. Show them the way, O God. Allow an angel to enter their path that will give them hope in some way. Ease their pain and burden, dear Father, in your own way. We pray this prayer as we glorify your name. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda this evening? If not,
I just have a couple of questions that I would like to ask at the end, provided I can find my notes.
Go ahead.
Okay,
at the end of our agenda?
Yeah, I would just like to ask you a question about the downtown traffic lights, because I'm a little confused as to how they're supposed to.
All right, well, let's just list that. Downtown traffic lights.
And then I'd like to maybe get a brief update on the new system that's being put into Whiskey, which should be a pretty simple thing.
All right, and new system on Whiskey, okay. Good questions. And there'll be... That'll be the last two items on our agenda. Okay, do we have a motion and a second then to approve the amended agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the agenda as amended.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, item one, minutes, consideration of the minutes of the work session in the regular meeting of August 9th, 2010. Any comments, changes, whatever? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. A show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item two of presentations is a presentation of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report Award. Mr. LeDuc, please.
During these economic times, we're very happy to announce that this past year the City of Aiken had a surplus in their budget, and much of the reasons our finances are in such great shape, and we continue to see very strong reserves, over half of the budget we have in reserves in case of any emergency. For 18 years now, we have received a financial award through the government financing office, and we have tonight Karen Wicker, who is going to make a presentation concerning the city receiving what we call the CAFRA, which is the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and I believe Cammy and Kim are here to receive that award. Karen, if you'd come up here. Karen was here with us last year, too. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. I'm honored to be here today on behalf of the Government Finance Officers Association to present the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting to the City of Aiken. The purpose of the program is to encourage and assist governments to prepare financial reports of the highest quality for the benefit of its citizens and other parties with a vital interest in the government's finances. During the half century the program has operated, it has gained widespread recognition as the premier indicator of excellence in governmental accounting and financial reporting. To earn the Certificate of Achievement in Excellence, the City of Aiken's Finance Department had to substantially conform to the program's demanding criteria, which go well beyond the minimum requirements of the generally accepted accounting principles. This is not the first time the City of Aiken has received this honor. Rather, today's presentation marks the 18th consecutive year that the City of Aiken has received the Certificate of Achievement. Such a record reflects the professionalism and commitment of numerous individuals, as well as many hours of hard work. It also reflects a high degree of dedication and leadership on the part of the Mayor and the City Council. The Government Finance Officers Association hopes that this award to the City of Aiken will serve as an example and encourage others to strive for the high standards in their own financial reports. Therefore, it is my privilege on behalf of the Government Finance Officers Association to present to the City of Aiken the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. I'd like to present the certificate to the mayor, and also I'd like to present a certificate to Kim Abney.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I want to thank Karen for coming down today. She is an employee of the South Carolina State Treasurer's Office, and she serves as the representative for the GFOA for the state of South Carolina. And I want to thank you, Mr. Mayor and council people and City Manager Mr. LeDuc, for all your support, because without your support, we could not have the excellent finances that we do have. Would be remiss if I didn't thank Sarah and her staff, as well as my staff, for all of their efforts in the preparation of the report and their diligence year-round.
Well, Kim, thank you so much, you and your staff, for what you do on a day-to-day basis, keeping track of everything and knowing where it is and keeping things straight. And we appreciate that very much. And to the staff and city manager and staff, we thank them, too. This just emphasizes the excellence of our city and the financial area, and we just want to keep it up, too. Keep it up. Thank you very much. And Karen, thank you for being with us this evening. Under old business, item three is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, yes, sir?
I'd like to renominate Stephen Peterson for the General Aviation Commission.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to renominate John Brookshire to the Recreation Commission.
Okay. Any others this evening? And we do have one on the agenda now. Do we not?
Council? We have two on our agenda.
Two on our agenda. Councilman?
Yeah, last meeting I had nominated Mariella Brown for the Community Development Committee, and
Don Barnes.
Don Barnes, the Aviation Commission.
Right.
So they're coming for approval tonight.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Yes, so moved.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
I have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Thank you very much. As we do many times, we want to thank our volunteers that work on our various and sundry different committees, advisory committees that help us. We have 12 or 13. I lose track sometimes, but they really do the work and helps council with information and those kinds of things. So we really appreciate every one of them that's working with us on a volunteer basis.
Mayor.
Yes, sir?
Could we recognize the Boy Scouts?
Yeah, we certainly can. Before they might have to leave, John Strickland, I know, is here. Would you scouts and leaders stand up, please? Listen, we've got a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to know your names. We usually do this. So would you speak loud? And we can start over there in the corner. And just tell us what troop first. I assume that you're in the same troop. Okay. So just give us your name, if you would.
Ricky. Russell Harden.
I'm Roger.
Mike Morton.
Cheryl Roush.
Tracy Price.
John Fritton.
Zachary Horn.
Zachary Hunter.
Joshua Strickland.
Well, thank you very much for that. And thank you also for being here and what you're doing in the Scouts. I can't think of a better program for young men. I was a tenderfoot one time. I hope y'all are doing better than I did. But it's a wonderful program. We all know that. And it will help you in your future career and as you get older. So keep up the good work. And thanks for being here. And when you do have a need to leave, just go ahead and leave. Okay? Thank you very much. Okay, under new business, item one, first reading of an ordinance devising the concept plan for the village at Woodside. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read the ordinance by its title. It's an ordinance amending the concept plan for property located in Woodside Plantation. The Silver Bluff Development Company originally brought the concept plan to the City of Aiken, which you approved several years ago. But within it, they had not listed the signs, the type of signs, and where these signs would be at. So they would like to modify the concept plan tonight, and they are doing so by presenting a number of different signs for you to approve. Now, although we have within our regulations the size of signs and the type of signs and where they should be located, when you get into a planned development, council has the leeway and the ability to increase the size of the sign, decrease the size of the sign, and to also determine at to what location you would allow those signs. We recently had a situation, I want to say it was on Trolley Line Road, where the a school was being located. That wasn't on Trolley Line, was it Hudson?
Which school?
Aiken Prep. I mean Preparatory Arts.
That's on
Vaucluse Road. And they asked for a sign to be almost twice the size that normally would be allowed, but because of what they needed on that sign and the speed along that area, council went ahead and approved it. So tonight, Pat Cunningham is here, and he will go ahead and discuss with you the various changes they are looking at. Again, you could approve it, you could modify what they have here, or you could deny it. It went to the Planning Commission and was denied on a 4-2 vote. So before you tonight is first reading of an ordinance to approve revisions to the concept plan for Village at Woodside signage. And upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, Mr. Cunningham, would you like to?
Pat Cunningham, 113 Mulberry. I'm just going to give some general comments, Mr. Mayor, and I'm going to have Kent Ball and David Siegel actually show you the signage and whatever. But The real key here is that the way the ordinance is written, you do allow the council the authority to modify the sign provisions as part of the concept plan to allow signs that would not otherwise be permitted in the zoning ordinance. I think this is a critical component because of the PR zone. PR zone is planned for this. In other words, y'all have the authority to turn down building designs or whatever. And I don't want to speak for the, you know, for what the Planning Commission said, but I do, and I believe that they liked the signs we were presenting, but they were somewhat concerned that you have to comply with the commercial zones that each one of these type uses are in. And this is really not general commercial. This is a PR zone, which means in the if you go by the actual wording of the ordinance, the signs shown in say A through F are directional signs, which are not allowed by the zoning ordinance. In a PR zone, because of the nature of the PR zone, you have to have directional signage. It just makes sense when you have a very large development that you have directional signs. We're going to take care of the signage, and anything that's in the street right away would be maintained by us. I think that it is a key component for a planned residential. Remember, this is all part of a 3,000 acre PR zone. The original sign that was allowed for the original Woodside, which was put up in 1986, would not be allowed according to this ordinance. The size requirements, it's too large. It would not be required. It would not pass according to today's specifications. But if you presented it, which we did, Mr. Mayor, back in 1986-87, you passed on that because the sign was there. We feel that the signs we're presenting make sense. I think that the Planning Commission felt like the signs made sense. I think they were concerned about allowing on a commercial zone that this would open up a Pandora's box to other commercial zones. But remember, this is a PR zone. And I think the flexibility that the PR zone has is exactly why we're here. If another planned residential comes in with 3,000 acres and has the amount of green space we do and does what we do, then I would feel like the city council, within its right, has the same authority to approve the type signs we're going to present to you tonight. I'll just turn it over to Kent, and he'll show you the signage that we want to do. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Oh, hi, Kent. Somewhere in your talk, if you would tell us why the signage that you have now is you don't feel that's sufficient.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I think to expand a little bit on what Pat has presented and said, and to answer your point, Mr. Mayor, is at the village, it is a unique mix of several different uses. Within the village itself, we have a residential component, which consists of townhomes, single-family homes, and some cottages. We have a medical campus, which has a wellness center, some doctor's offices, and very soon to open an imaging center for Aiken Regional Hospital. We'll have a retail center and core where there'll be village shops, restaurants, stores, what have you. And then there'll be another component that has other commercial buildings that would be offices, a grocery. That's all part of the concept plan that was approved for the village. And that wide variety and mixture of uses requires a comprehensive signage plan that right now within the ordinance we can't provide. When residents, visitors, customers, public safety, delivery services come to the village with all these different uses, it's important that there's an efficient and clear signage plan that they can rely on to service the various components of the village. So right now we have a temporary entrance sign up that somewhat identifies the village itself. The village it is outside the gates of Woodside, so it is open to the public. Anyone can go there. The residential, the commercial uses are open to the public, and there, in addition to that, there's over 10 acres of public parks, close to 3 miles of walking trails. There's over 60% common space. Those areas are all open to the public, so we feel it's vital to the members of the community and the success of the village to have a better signage plan to get people around. So what we're proposing is an entrance monument sign, and David, if you wouldn't mind, we have a little larger scale of it, but in your agenda package, it's on sheet A13, and this is would flank the entrance to the village at Village Green Boulevard, which intersects Silver Bluff Road and Richardson's Lake Road, and we're on the east side of Silver Bluff Road. It's a brick and wrought iron sign that identifies the village at Woodside. So a resident, business, what have you, that's in the village, would easily identify the community itself.
We're talking about this being at Richardson Lake Road, that intersection?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. So at Silver Bluff and Richardson's Lake, if you turned left, if you were heading south, it becomes Village Green Boulevard. To the right, it's Richardson's Lake Road, and to the left is Village Green Boulevard. And so this would flank the entrance roadway on either side. It's mainly entrance walls, and then there's lettering on it that identifies it as the village at Woodside. The second and very important component is a series of directional signs, which as you enter the village and you continue down Village Green Boulevard, it will gradually identify and direct you into the important components of the village, the residences, the inn, the future retail area. And as you get deeper into the village, the number and required number of signs on each one of those monument signs would reduce, and the signs get smaller. But right now we have some temporary wooden ones that are just too small, and frankly they don't provide the service that these signs we think would provide. Next would be some area identification signs, and these we feel are important because we have areas within the village, the medical campus, the inn, the residences, to really kind of get you located quickly where you need to go. We've taken great measures to try to locate the parking for a lot of these areas behind the building, so they're not on the main road. So it's important, we feel, to give you proper signage to know where you need to go to park and then to circulate within the village. And then the last sign is just building identification signs. So at each building, it would identify the owner, the tenant, the user of that building. So if you're going for your doctor's appointment, or you're going to visit your attorney, or you're going to the Aiken Design Center, it would be obvious that you were at the location that you were trying to get to. The signage layout plan in your package, please keep in mind this is a very small scale drawing. So graphically, it looks like there's far more signs that you probably feel are necessary. But this is a large community. These signs are spread out. As Pat noted, they will be owned and maintained by the Village Property Owners Association, so there would be no maintenance expense to the public or to the city. We are planning on building on very high-end materials, brick, wrought iron, and we would like to have a high-end look and a clean look throughout the village. This type of strategy and signage program is very common in these traditional planned neighborhoods. Ion, Daniel Island, Baxter Village are a few traditional mixed-use developments in the state of South Carolina. They all have similar signage needs and a similar plan to what we're proposing. So that's why we feel we need these signs. They will help our businesses as well as our residents and visitors to the village. Any questions?
At the signs you have now, what are they like? I've been through there, but it's been several weeks, and it's a little fuzzy in my mind.
Right now, they are painted wood posts with a composite painted signage in between. The directional signs are small little 4x4 posts with with about a 2-foot by 3-foot sign on it. The lettering is small, and it's very hard to read as you drive through the village to understand where you're supposed to go.
Have you had, you mentioned the Homeowners Association, have you had discussions with them about the signage?
Well, this is a separate Homeowners Association. This is the Village's Property Owners Association. So it's very young and very new. We only have a few residences. As the developer, at this point in time, we are the association, and we're funding the association, and we'll manage the association. So of the few businesses that are there already, we have had some significant feedback. David, speak to that. He's our property and leasing manager as to how it's impacting their businesses. But it, right now, what we have is inadequate, and we feel it would help the businesses as well as the visitors.
Okay. If David wants to say something, go ahead.
I just had one question for you to explain to me again. You're going to have two of these, one on the right and one on the left, or just?
Yes, ma'am. As you turn onto Village Green Boulevard, there would be a brick entrance monument on each side of the road. So there'd be one on the right and the left. They're offset out of the right of way, and they will kind of frame the entrance with landscaping to the village.
I got a question.
Sure.
Did the planning commission say which format for the signs is acceptable, or were they all non-acceptable, or was it just the precedent that we would set?
I believe it was more the precedents. They felt, and comments were made, that the actual signs themselves they thought were very nice and were of high quality, and they would not have a problem with. But I think it was the variance within the current ordinance, the way it's written, as well as the magnitude of the village and some of its different needs, that was problematic for the planning commission.
And Pat, both, I guess, and David, the question comes to my mind that these are expensive signs. They look very nice. Why in the world would you be putting them up if you didn't feel strongly that they would help you in your business? That's what I don't understand.
Mr. Mayor, I think the whole key to this, had we known exactly what we wanted to build when we presented our plan, if we'd known, had our architects design exactly what we wanted, we wouldn't even be here, because we would have presented this with the overall site plan. That's what was, but at the time, because it was such a large development with so many type components, we didn't have the hardscape design that we wanted, that needed, and we spent a lot of money paying the architects saying this is exactly what we want. If we would have done that, we would have submitted it. That's what a PR is supposed to do. We made a mistake with that. We should have had all the signs designed or whatever. Remember, we first presented this was when I first went back out there 5 years ago, and the components, even though the usage, the hospital is just finishing up 12,000 square foot imaging center. At the time, we knew that we had a medical complex out there, but we didn't know exactly which building they were going to be.
Yeah.
In other words, this should have been presented with the concept plan and the whole thing, but we did not have our hard designs, because that's what a PR calls for. You have got to submit exactly what the signs have to look like. And I think the reason why the 4-2 was, they were afraid that if y'all said, okay, you can have this, that a commercial developer would come and say, I got a commercial zone here, and you did it for Woodside. Well, the difference is, this is a PR zone.
Right.
In other words, if you have another PR zone with 3,000 acres and 79 acres of mixed use, which I believe is the only one in the city limits of Aiken I know of, or even in Aiken County, that is this scope, then they would have to submit it at the time the plan's doing. So we should have waited, but I don't think we would really have known what kind of signage we really wanted. And remember, these signs that are on the entranceway, that I believe it's set back on the 100-foot, the 100-foot setback on Silver Bluff Road, which I believe is the only development I know that has a 100-foot green space all the way set back. So, but we need to have something where people know exactly, you know, that is the village. So that's the reason why we're doing it, and that's the reason why we're coming back now, because we have it designed.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you, Pat.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
If I could, please. I mean, I see this as two separate issues. I see it as very nice looking entry gates into the village of Woodside. And then the signage that goes on there, rather than measuring the beautiful gates that are leading into it, then I think the sign should stand on its own as far as the square footage of it.
That is a concern, Kent, that you brought up, that where does the sign stop and where does the wall, where does the wall stop?
Well, it is dealt with within the ordinance, and there are formulas and calculation provisions within the ordinance on calculating the square footage of the sign. I think you're right. If we had just done those as brick monument walls and then put a sign 4 feet in front of it, they could have been dealt with as two independent entities. But we think it looks better and nicer to have it integrated into one entrance monument sign.
Well, still, you know, when we look at this, when we look at the entry gates into the village, I mean, this is certainly, you can't consider that the sign. I mean, we've got wrought iron fencing, we've got a pillar down at one end. That's not part of your sign.
I would agree.
I would say that's part of the entry gate into the village. Mm-hmm. Now, the sign is the square footage of the writing or the plaque that placed upon these entry gates. This is a planned commercial, and, you know, the council would have to approve the gates. And then I think the signage issue has to be dealt on a standalone issue.
Mm-hmm. I think in conjunction with that is the need for the directional signs, which are not dealt with within the current ordinance, and that's what we're hoping that City Council will rely on their authority to review and see the unique and different needs, because a directional sign that tells you about where another property or, you know, Dr. A's office is down the road, keep heading straight, is not a permitted sign within the current commercial zoning ordinance. And so that's, I think, one of the other key components of the need for some flexibility with the current ordinance, where it's written for this type of mixed-use development.
Mr. Mayor, or address it to Kent. One thing, I'm with where Councilman Wells is, the signs inside are probably one issue and the sign outside is another. Inside, would those be on the public right-of-way, which is city right-of-way in this case, since it's open to the public, or will they be on private property?
Right now, we have them located. They would be within the city right-of-way. We're trying to locate them as on the outside, but we think from a visibility perspective, they would be better located so that you could clearly read them as you drove through, and that would be best in the right-of-way.
And I had proposed this question to the city manager, which I got an answer back. Is there a liability issue putting the monument there versus the standard sign, you know? And I think that's something that, being on city property and we put the monument up there, how is that regulated from somebody running into it because they were forced into it or whatever? If you could address that, please.
Yes, sir. You have signage throughout the city located within the right-of-way of the city.
You have
speed limit signs, and you have directional signs, you have highway marking signs, stop signs. And so, I mean, that already does exist within the city of Aiken. Can the city get sued? Certainly the city can get sued if somebody was to run into one of those signs. Obviously, if that was to happen, you're going to have to look at all of the facts of what happened. You know, was somebody driving too fast through there and ran off the curb and hit a sign? Was somebody driving drunk? Did somebody get hit and knocked into a sign? There's all kinds of things you have to figure out before you can decide who's going to be liable in an accident like that. But does just the placement of the sign create, you know, that liability on the part of the city? I don't think it does. But, you know, if the circumstances arise where that could be determined later, I mean, certainly that's going to be something that somebody could try.
And, of course, you know, most of the signs are either on the little metal round post or the pressed metal post. And the damage caused by that is considerably less than, you know, where you've got the brick mass sitting there. And that was my concern. If a vehicle hits that, there's not as many of these signs, obviously, as there are the other road signs around. And I don't maybe that's been determined somewhere, but I would hate for us to approve something that comes back to catch us later on.
Can I make one remark to that, Councilman Ebner? I just wanted to point out that the signs that at this point are located that we would like to locate closer to the road and within the right of way would be the directional signs.
Right.
The signs G on your information package, F, those are building identification signs. Those would be out of the right way on private property and would not be an issue. The directional signs we would like to have along the road. And we could certainly reevaluate whether they could be placed just outside the right of way.
You see my point there. You've got something that's different, mm-hmm. and even though the city approves it, does that difference make for somebody runs into it? Mm-hmm. And obviously on the inside of Woodside Plantation, there are a number of these, I call them monument signs, and I guess that's a proper designation. And a couple of those have been run over before already, yes. And I don't know where that goes, but it's just a thought to be sure that we aren't setting ourselves up for either you a problem or us a problem in the future.
Yeah.
We could have shipped them off the right way, but shipped them so far away, people don't know where they're going. You put them right on the edge of the popular collection signs as well.
Okay. I think the other thing is you said that the property owners would maintain the signs and keep them up and so forth, because obviously yes. This is beyond normal city maintenance.
It certainly is, and there is a separate property owners association for the village that both the residential and the commercial components are members of, and that association will be charged with the maintenance and ownership.
Again, follow up what Councilman Wells was mentioning on the entry sign, and I guess, you know, the brick wall and the rest of that, you know, is part of the architectural features. But we have a sign at the current Woodside entrance that has, I guess, smaller letters on it. Is that the difference here?
Yes, and right now that's a temporary sign
down at Woodside at the main entry gate. That has letters on it that were approved to be larger at one time, and I just wonder if those are large enough letters for this sign.
Well, I think within the provisions of the ordinance, they do calculate the monuments at each end, the brick ends of it, the base, as well as the wood sandblasted lettered sign in between at the main entrance.
And this sign, are the letters larger here than on the sign there? Do you happen to, by visual, are they about
the
same size?
I would say the village component, the word the village, is probably slightly smaller than what we have on our main entrance at Woodside Plantation. Okay. And then the other words, the at and Woodside, are probably significantly smaller.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I guess I don't experience as much anxiety with the proposed change and what's being recommended with this revised concept, the plan for the village at Woodside. This is the first reading of this ordinance to revise the concept plan. And if we're finished with the discussion, I'd like to move that we adopt this on first reading and move it to a second reading and public hearing.
I'll second that, but I do have a question about the smaller signs. especially A, B, C, and D. I think if you locate E, F, and G on private property, there would be no problem with that. And more than likely, that's where they belong, up next to the buildings where they're identifying, especially with G. Is there a way that you can recess these a little bit from the road so that, since you're going to maintain them, that they would be on private property? I mean, how much further back would you have to go? And
I don't think it's very far, and we would certainly entertain that and would be glad to give you our opinion as to whether we think they would still be effective or not.
Could you do that before the next reading?
We certainly could.
Okay.
Kent, would you also be amenable to adding a condition to the approval of the ordinance if council was to decide to approve the ordinance, just to address Councilmember Ebner's concerns about the maintenance of the signs, just to make it clear that
absolutely.
Woodside or their predecessor, the owner or their successors would be obligated to maintain and keep up those signs?
Certainly.
Okay.
I think one other thing I'd like to ask, if possible, I guess, of the city manager, and again, Mr. Wells and several have brought it up, to be sure that how we're looking at this sign, you know, fits within the guidance of the PR designation, you know, the wall and everything behind it, because we obviously do have a lot of fences around town, and I'm just trying to be sure that we're looking at this, you know, with all perspective there. And my main concern is the Me Too concept, you know, around when you start doing one of them, whether you're a PR or not, others are going to come in and say, well, you can do the same for me.
The way the PR zoning is set up, you know, council does have the authority and the right to evaluate each individual planned residential, planned commercial development on its own merits, to see, you know, in this particular case where, you know, these certain set of characteristics exist, we believe this type of signage is appropriate for this particular development. The next development that may come along, you would be able to evaluate that other development based on its characteristics and make decisions without having to worry about, well, those are the exact same signs you did at Woodside. Yeah, but this is in a different part of town where you don't have those kinds of brick structures and that sort of thing, and that really isn't appropriate for that particular area of town. So, you know, we would like something more of a wooden nature or something like that. You know, council has the ability to evaluate different properties in that way when you're looking at it from a planned residential or planned commercial zoning.
Thank you.
I would agree, but I think at the same time it doesn't mean we need to negate the current ordinance. In our packet, we received a copy of the Planning Commission deliberation on this issue. They denied it, and the concern on their part was the compliance with the existing ordinance. So, yes, you're right, Mr. Smith. We can't approve it because it's a planned concept. We can essentially do anything we want to, but I'm a little conflicted with the fact that it's so out of line with the ordinance. I'm just not comfortable. It's only first reading, so I hope we get some input from the folks out in the Woodside area. Let us know what their thoughts are. But I think if we look at the Planning Commission, it, as I read it, it was rejected 4-2, and the concern again was the fact that it's not, these are not in compliance with the ordinance. So
let's look at that a moment.
Okay.
The fact that it's PR, planned residential, is that still the fact that it's not in compliance with the ordinance? It's PR.
Well, it doesn't need to be in compliance with the ordinance if it's PR. That's my point.
That's my point.
Yeah, but we have an ordinance for the rest of the city that says this is the way signs should be. So now just because we get something that says PR, we're supposed to disregard our sign ordinance and say, it looks pretty, let's forget the sign ordinance and let's do it. The sign ordinance applies to everybody else in the city, and we're saying, okay, but it doesn't need to comply to the Village of Woodside.
Does the sign ordinance say that this applies to every place in the city, even PR?
No, it doesn't, Mayor.
No, it doesn't.
No.
So PR is something separate on its own. We've been dealing with PR for years and years and years. We've had a number of changes in Woodside itself.
I mean, how many times have we had changes that look good, that were reasonable at the time? It's good for business. This is something that gets me. You guys think this is good for your business. Is that correct?
Yes.
You wouldn't be spending this money, you wouldn't be promoting these signs if there wasn't some good to come out of it, in your opinion. So why should we not, when we have the prerogative, PR, and we've had it for years, we've made changes for years.
Mr. Mayor, I think the real critical thing is, according to the ordinance, you cannot have directional signs in PR. I'm just saying common sense of what I just said.
Okay, so that is one difference.
It's in that the ordinance says you cannot have directional signs because directional signs are not approved in specific zoning. There is no directional. So if you have to have directional signs in a PR. That's the conflict that even the Planning Commission looked at and said, this doesn't make any sense. But they were conflicted because we really don't have a PR zoning sign requirement. It's whatever the zoning is, or if you're commercial over here, if you got a hotel here, whatever, they don't allow any directional signs. That's the reason why they were smart. They said the ordinance states that the council has the authority in the signage provision as part of the concept plan to allow signs not otherwise permitted in the zoning ordinance. That's why they wrote it that way. Think about it. If you did not allow any directional signs in the downtown Aiken, that makes sense. In other words, that's the reason why we're asking for it. And if we have to move the signs, if there's a conflict with the right of ways, especially because we got two huge parks out there, we could shift them back, and I think the directional signs would work. So we're going to do everything we can to get them out of the right of way. But that's the reason why they do give you the authority to do it in a PR zone.
Should we consider change?
Just listening to Pat read the what council has the authority to do, and knowing how we have dealt with the changes that have come before council over the years at Woodside, and you're perfectly right, had you had all this in place some time ago, we wouldn't be here discussing it. But also, knowing that you've made an investment in the area, and I don't think you'd put up anything that would impact the character or the charm of which this community has brought. Secondly, the bigger picture that I'm looking at, as we discuss with longevity, the sign, are people that I know that are looking for jobs, and given that this area is going to bring in medical offices and retail shops and others, here are people that we can put to work. And I recognize that we want to spend time talking about how large the sign is and impact the character and charm of this town long term. But reality tells me, too, it's a bigger picture with people needing jobs as well, and you wouldn't put anything that we would be embarrassed by in this area.
David, you want to speak?
Yeah, my name's David Sewell, 957 Oleander Drive. To both of your points, my position being the sales and leasing manager, I am in direct contact with the businesses that have chosen to invest in our development in the city of Aiken, and some of them were previously not in the city of Aiken. And on four occasions, they have come to me and made a formal complaint about their clients being able to get to their businesses. One complaint went as far to say that I'm going to withhold rent until you solve this issue. And I pleaded with them and said there's reasonable ways that are being discussed, being planned, that will overcome that. So to your point on the businesses and why we are making that investment, these are people who've made a big investment in us. We care very deeply about the aesthetics of our development. I think if anyone has been out there since we started constructing buildings, even our worst critics 10 years ago when we came through this planning process would probably give us a pat on the back, because we have designed buildings that really are aesthetically pleasing. And I know I'm kind of biased, but we're trying to create that traditional timeless architecture. Some of the challenges in doing that is we hide the parking areas, and these patrons of the businesses cannot find the parking areas, and that's You know, it would be easy to put a big institutional building with a big black top and everybody knows where it is. Everyone hates the building, but you know where you're going. We don't believe that. We believe in a nice building. And before I leave, I took a trip to a couple developments. These developments, Daniel Island in Charleston, mm-hmm. the Ion in Mount Pleasant, Sea Pines in Hilton Head, all these areas care very deeply about their future of their developments and are very difficult to get things through. Every one of them had directional signs. Every one of them had things that we are asking for. And I do have some pictures that I'd like to pass around and hope that y'all take this a second.
That's fine. Steve?
You know, for the last couple of months, we've been scratching our heads how to figure out how to help the businesses. If, in fact, the directional signs would help the businesses, I don't see where the council should stand in the way of, you know, giving businesses a chance to do something. I mean, this is basically what we've been talking about for 2 months, or actually probably 2 years. And, you know, if you think it's conducive to making sure people that are intending to get one of your services, they know where they're going. I think that's just intuitively obvious. And I'm not really worried about the precedent, because once we set the precedent, like the law says, we can still deny any future abuse of building a sign or creating a sign that's within, outside of tolerance.
And PR, yes.
Mr. Mayor, my only point, as the gentleman comes up, my only point was I think the signs are laid out very fine. I'm going to vote to approve it, but I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that the Planning Commission had a concern about the balance between what the Village of Woodside is asking and what the sign ordinance says, and maybe we ought to take a look at the sign ordinance and it needs to be revised. That was the frustration that at least four members of the Planning Commission reflected, and I just don't think we should ignore that. I think the signs are wonderful, and I agree it's well laid out, and I agree it would have been impossible when the first plan came in to determine where they would be 5-10 years later. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I've been out there, and you're right. You need directions. So I'm not against the project at all. I'm going to vote to approve it, but I think we ought to support the Planning Commission at least decide whether or not we need to make some changes to our sign ordinance.
Absolutely, and we can get that on their agenda tomorrow, and it sounds like we ought to, but we still have the right to do this in PR if council elects to do it. Yes, sir. Mr. Lamb.
Walter Lamb. I happen to live in Woodside, 320 Magnolia Lake Court. I've listened to your comments, and I feel that most of them are most constructive. I feel that I'd be very proud to be associated with the signature of this particular signage I've seen. My major concern is the lack of concern about the existing laws that we have in place. I think they should have made a comparison as to what's existing and what's not existing, as to and make a suggestion as to what should be changed to the particular things in place, rather than having this particular conversation. Because I think your job, related to jobs and getting the law in place, is a natural thing for you to follow. But I think in the interest of Woodside, I feel it would be commendable to have such quality signs out there. However, I'd like to understand what the difference between the existing laws are and address that particular point and change the thing, because it doesn't fit at all with lack of signage of directional. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So my comments being, in the future, when you make laws, make sure that you anticipate reality rather than what we'd like to have.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lamb. I would like to ask Ed Evans to come up, our planning director, and give us his thoughts, what the PR says you can do and that kind of thing. Thank you, Scouts, for being with us.
But they're not leaving on my account. I don't think so. The PR zone says that you apply the signage that's allowed in by a particular use. If you have intense retail, you can have a sign that's allowed, say, in the GB zone. If you have an office building, you apply the signage that's in the office zone. If you have apartments, you apply the signage that's allowed in the apartment zone. And then you've got the catch-all wording that anything can apply if council says it's okay, which is where you are tonight.
Okay. Now, based on what Mr. Lamb says, we've got a law then, ordinance, that says that we can do this depending on the conditions of that particular area that we're looking at the time. Is that correct, Ed?
Correct.
And here we've got a wonderful unit here, a Woodside Village, that wants to do this. And I had the same words on my tongue that Steve just said. We've been working for months and months, hours we've spent, trying to figure out if we're going to spend another 2 or 3 or 4 months, who knows how long. How can we help our businesses? And most of the time they say it's the bureaucracy, it's the ordinances, it's this, that, or the other thing. And this may be kind of a simple thing that we can do. Here's a group that wants to do something to help their business. We can do it by law, so why shouldn't we do it? Now, we certainly support the Planning Commission. They're our appointees, and we support them. That doesn't mean we always agree. We don't always agree. But we support them immensely.
Mr. Mayor, there's no reflection on anybody's part that I've heard tonight that says we shouldn't approve this. It's going to get approved 7-0. Ed?
Well, I don't know that, but I'm just saying, here's an opportunity that we can help.
And we're all going to take it.
And we're spending all this time trying to figure out, I don't know.
Ed, based on your attendance at the Planning Commission, is there any need that you see as a planning director to look at any changes whatsoever to the signed ordinance, or are you happy with the way it is and what we're going to do tonight?
To say I'm happy with it is not accurate. There's always room for improvement. I think fundamentally it's fine. I think what Woodside is requesting is totally legitimate. I have no problem with it.
Case closed.
I want to address precedent, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Because if you go out number one, there is a residential development.
Savannah Lakes.
Summer Lakes.
Yes.
And look at the sign there.
One each side.
Savannah Lakes.
And you know that it doesn't meet.
We still control the sign.
And we knew that shortly after we approved it, that it was larger than it needed to be. But we provided water and sewer for them, so they needed to meet. And it is not in the city, but it does. We did have to act on it. And I just think there comes a time when you have to do what makes sense to the owner of the property and to the situation that you have at hand. I think that to make an ordinance that would fit every single category would probably be a tough job for any board or any commission. And I think we need to have the ability to make it fit if that's what we need to do.
Okay, we...
Just one last comment to kind of close the circle. I believe in what Ms. Clyburn is saying, and I understand what Mr. Lamb said, but we don't really want to pin us down. We want to maintain the flexibility.
Yeah.
And, we get elected to make decisions, and basically if it comes up to a PR, we'll make a decision whether it's 9 feet high, 10 feet high, or 6 feet high, or whatever it happens to be. We can vote. So we maintain flexibility in the ordinance, and we don't have to, hamstring ourselves by making a numerical criteria for the PR situation.
Call for the question, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Any other discussion?
He calls for the question and seconded.
I'm sorry.
I don't think there's any objection to the calling of the question.
Okay.
Is what I'm hearing.
Okay. Show of hands. All approved. Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Is Thank you very much for your presentation.
See you in 2 weeks.
Okay, thank you.
Item 2, first reading of an ordinance to rezone property 181 Buford Street from light industrial to general business. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to rezone certain property consisting of 1.04 acres of land owned by Keaton Patel from light industrial LI to general business GB. This particular area along Buford Street, they'd like to build a convenience store. That property, when the zoning took place in the city of Aiken, all of it was zoned light industrial. There is very little industrial property along there. It's becoming more and more business. Next to it is a general family dollar store. And the Planning Commission voted 4-2 in favor of this rezoning. There were four different conditions that they would like to see take place based on the traffic study, that off of Buford Street there would be a full access in and out, and that this would be located 175 feet from Barnwell and 100 feet from the Dollar General store driveways, that there would share, if possible, an access with the existing Dollar General store, and again, if possible, that the Buford Street access one lane entrance and two lanes with a stop sign control, and on Barnwell Avenue it should be a right in, right out, and as far away from the intersection at Buford as possible. For City Council consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone property at 181 Buford Street from light industrial to general business.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'd like to move for approval of this.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second. Any discussion?
Is there a presentation from the developer? The owner?
Is anyone here who would like to speak on this issue? Okay.
And as I understand it, if we put it into general business, the only thing that's being planned to build here is a gas station and pumps.
That is correct.
Okay.
However, let me just state that once it's rezoned as general business, that developer could leave and decide to put something else in there under general business. So anything that's under the general business code could eventually go into the site. Mm-hmm. Their intent, though, is to put a convenience store.
Okay. Any other discussion? Comments? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously on first reading.
Yes, I think so.
Item 3 is first reading of an ordinance to revise the annexation of Lacey Cosmetology School. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We're amending ordinance number 0622-2009. So this occurred on June 22nd, 2009. And the fact that this ordinance needs to be amended, and the fact that we gave them 180 days to submit a concept plan, due to some financial situation, Mr. Lacey was not able to bring that to the planning department. The planning department now has the modified plan that fits it. And so before we can approve it, since the 180 days has elapsed, we need council's reapproval of this. And so tonight we're asking that you would consider first reading ordinance to amend the annexation agreement for a 5-acre tract of land on University Parkway near Arbor Court. And if you so approve it, then they would go ahead and come back at next meeting with second reading.
Okay.
Do we have a move approval?
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay.
2 weeks.
Item 4, first reading of an ordinance revising the Aiken City Code concerning the abatement of nuisances and dwellings unfit for human habitation. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have before you actually two ordinances here. We combine them in to one title, but the first ordinance is an ordinance revising Chapter 10 of the Aiken City Code to include Section 1011 to govern the abatement of nuisances. The second ordinance is entitled an ordinance revising Chapter 10 of the Aiken City Code to amend the Section 10.4 to dwelling units unfit for human habitation. They both go hand in glove together. This is based on discussion we had with City Council several months ago concerning the fact that we had a piece of property on Ori Street where construction started. due to financial considerations, after they had stripped off the siding and began a lot of the work, they stopped for a long period of time. We had another one in Gem Lakes that went on for years. We had another piece of property on Marion Street. These don't come up every month. In fact, maybe once a year we'll get a piece of property like this. But currently we do not have any means of going in there and enforcing them to get back with construction. This would allow us to go ahead and not have to wait 120 days to go ahead and start the process if we thought that the property was unsafe or there were some other particular problems, which right now we have to give 120 day notice. It also allows us that if the piece of property needed monitoring because of lack of action, we will have some fees in here that will set this up so that we could begin that process. Now, saying all this, we think this is a good ordinance. We feel it meets the goals that City Council has. 6 months from now, a year from now, if you feel like some of these changes, we need to make some based on comments you may get, or once we get into the actual practice of enforcing these regulations, we could always go back and modify this ordinance as we have just done on Mr. Lacey's a year and a half later. So with that, we would like Council's consideration on the first reading of an ordinance to amend and revise Chapter 10.4 of the Aiken City Code concerning dwelling units unfit for human habitation and Section 10.11 to govern the abatement of nuisances.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor, but I want to know if how this would affect other properties. Well, I'm going to second it, and then I'll talk to the city manager.
Okay, comments?
Before the second reading.
Yes, I have a couple of questions for Mr. Moore. One of them is, this applies across the entire city, regardless of PR or not?
Yeah, the particular zones that we have no bearing on this.
So you can enforce it anywhere, and you know where I'm coming from. You can enforce it anywhere in the city, including PR.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And having read the your proposal in August there, this pretty well parallels the county ordinance and the state ordinance from your cover letter. So we're covered here from the legal aspects of timing and what we can do and cannot do, right?
Yes, sir. The one for unfit for human habitation, that is modeled after a specific section in the state code. And looking at our current ordinance 10.4, I didn't think it followed that set of statutes as closely as it needed to. So basically, I made that revision. The other is a general nuisance ordinance that we just didn't have before, that a lot of other jurisdictions, including the county, have. But in addition, I did add some things for an emergency abatement situation that the county does not have, and also the thing for the section for the stalled construction projects. But these are modeled after some ordinance I found out of state, really. There wasn't anything in South Carolina that I could find like them. But there's nothing in statute in state law prohibiting them. What you see in that emergency abatement procedure is something the city would have at common law. But I felt it would be better to have a process laid out that citizens and staff could be familiar with and actually look at, and this is what we do in this type of situation.
Thank you.
Can I give a hypothetical example just to make sure that I'm on course with what we are talking about in terms of abatement or nuisance of a dwelling? We see several homes that we believe that are unfit based on codes, and we cite those homes as unfit, those dwellings as unfit to live in. We fine these folks for some fees based on having to monitor this property?
That's right, and the fees, which can vary depending on the situation, as how much involvement the city may have to go back to. They may go one particular property one time, they may get another one 10 times. It's also the process of formulating letters to send notices and different things. And that's really the expense that the city's going through, that obviously, you know, staff is on salary, but they could be working on something else for other citizens, basically, if they weren't doing this. So that's really the idea in these.
So we give these folks 120 days, basically, to say, get your act together in terms of getting this dwelling in order.
We used the former, our current ordinance gives them 120 days. This would give the ability for the enforcement officer to go to 30 days in his discretion. And it says may. And the enforcement officer, the Mike Jordan or Phil Noah, usually what it'll be, would have the discretion if they looked at the circumstance and they see a financial hardship or what have you, and quite often they do,
not
go in 30 days. They're not, this isn't a shall, but we also have situations that are, what we're finding are egregious and really call for quicker action. And what we're finding is that absolute 120 days that you got to give everybody becomes a big problem if you have an Ori Street situation or something like that, where staff is really, their hands are tied by the ordinance. But I do know, you know, there are going to be the situations where there's somebody who's physically unable, you know, all these type things. And I can tell you that they look for ways to work with these folks. And even, I know Phil Noah has coordinated with different charities. You know, they're not looking to beat up on someone who cannot help it.
And that's where my question was leading, in terms of hardship, number one. Secondly, recognizing that that dwelling could be next door to a conscientious neighbor who keeps and maintains their property. But there are those extenuating circumstances where someone may be in the hospital. I mean, who knows the circumstances? Or could be out of a job as a...
Right, and that's what makes these...
And looking for...
These tough, and in my opinion, the practical thing is giving the staff some flexibility. Because on the one end, you have the cases where, man, we really need to do something. And clearly, a person, the owner, whomever, they have the resources, and they're just not
doing what they should.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other extreme, you know, you have maybe an elderly person who, with financial trouble and all that, and to set up hardline rules, too many hardline rules, you're going to get where you hamper staff in dealing with one extreme or the other.
Well, in those circumstances where there is obvious neglect by the owner, do we go in once we deem the property inhabitable, tear that property, that dwelling down, and then tax it?
That would be one of the options.
Okay.
You know, let me give you a good example of this. There's a piece of property on Sumter Street between Park Avenue and Richland Avenue. It used to be an old nightclub, and the nightclub, the roof was collapsing in. You're very familiar with that?
Very much so. And we tore the building
down. And it took over 120 days to give the first notice. We went to court, and then they kept making promises. The bottom line is 2 years later, we were finally tearing down this structure and putting a lien on the property until they paid it, which they had. But if we could have taken 120 days and just made it 30 days, there was no reason why we had to spend so much time in court and constantly going back and forth and trying to get the issue resolved. Mm-hmm. And that's why we'd like to have that flexibility. Now, granted, most of the time we would probably go the 120 days to give them plenty of time. But if we felt that there was a unsafe condition that could be causing a health problem or injury problem to others, like in this case, the roof was actually collapsing in,
right,
we would have had that flexibility to go ahead and do this.
And, you know, going to court doesn't mean that day you're found guilty. They still will have the opportunity to go before the judge, plead their case. And this is a livability court situation where the judge is looking to work with both sides and generally resolve things, you know, short of a quote-unquote conviction for ordinance. I mean, we've had a lot of success when things actually go to court, and generally they settle out of court. There's agreement, hey, look at the situation in so many days, what's realistic it would take to clean up this lot. And we find that, okay, things like, well, we'll come back on this next court date, and if it isn't done, you know, we're looking at trying the case. But over 90% of the time, what we find is the situation gets resolved before that next court date. And that's the giving them the ticket and the court date and then getting that process going seems to be the most effective way to resolve these things. Is, you know, we were talking about in the earlier discussion, you know, reality, but that seems to be the reality that I see. And that Phil Noah and Mike Jordan see, the actual summons to go to court seems to get everybody to, on both sides or between us and the individual, whatever, to resolve the situation.
And sometimes the situations we get are fairly simple things like grass, weeds, brush. Grass is this high, you know. It's ruining the neighbor's view, or it's not helping his property any. What I'm looking at this the section 1011A1, where it says allowing offensive unsafe matter such as grass, weeds, brush to become overgrown. How is that going to be handled in your view?
Well, in my view, under this system, the person for their first time they're found in violation, basically the staff would have the ability to issue a warning. You have so much time to resolve this. Basically, it calls for 30 days. If you cannot, then you're going to get actual summons for court. And any violation after that, we won't be going through this warning process. Which, what we've had a problem with, well, with 120 days and growing,
sure.
Seasons, let's say they get one in September or something for overgrown.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand that. I guess I didn't ask the question correctly.
Right.
How high is too high?
Well, we decided we didn't want to put a exact standard because some people, there's so many different types of grass, for instance, and I have that, I think they call Johnson grass, that if it rains tonight, it'll be about 10 inches tomorrow. Some of it is, not all of it. And, you know, I was talking to Phil Noah, he's like, you know, if we, because I've seen some ordinance 8 inches, 10 inches, but he felt like it would be an issue. You have a bunch of rain, and then people with a certain amount of types of grass is going to be jumping up there, and I know that you can get in trouble with exact standards.
Yeah, I know this is a little tough issue.
Right, it is.
But are we going to wait and let people complain before something's done? Are we going to be out there looking, driving around, you know, not looking for the problems, but just being in the neighborhood, you know, and seeing what's going on?
Well, in general, the city compared to other jurisdictions, we try to have enough staff where we can be proactive and not just, okay, I mean, this is the same way with kind of the BZA things. We got Tommy Paradise out there looking at, so you get the ones that are complained about, but you also get the ones that staff find, and particularly we got Phil Noah looking for, he's not necessarily waiting, obviously, but you're going to get a combination of citizens making you aware of them, but staff is looking for them as well.
Yeah,
and
we don't want to be in a policing business on grass and things like that.
Right, and that's kind of the whole nuisance area. It's one of these, you know it when you see it.
That's right.
I mean, that's just the nature of the beast.
Exactly.
And I would point out that we know why we asked for this ordinance to be brought to us. We know the kinds of issues. We've all been involved with them. I don't think any of us would support passage of this ordinance if it means that a city inspector is going to drive through neighborhoods looking for high grass. I certainly wouldn't. The purpose of this is to give the staff the flexibility to deal quickly with some of the issues that we've all talked about in the last 6 months. I think we've had three or four of them, as Roger talked about, the egregious one at Jim Lakes. We've had a couple of construction projects that were just sitting there with no work done, kind of tearing down the neighborhood. And the whole purpose of this, at least in my mind, was to give the staff the flexibility to deal more quickly with these kinds of issues. We're not going to go look and measure anybody's grass. Now, it's not to say that high grass wouldn't eventually be considered a nuisance with certain circumstances, but hopefully we can rely on the judgment of our inspection department to provide
that. And they will be looking, but they're not going to be looking Barney Fife style. I don't know, remember that said he's actually got a ruler out. Are you 6 inches off where you park? You know, that kind of.
Well,
obviously that's not.
My point for just asking the questions have been is to make sure that we show some consideration to those folks who may be experiencing some problems based on the financial condition of our country. And you know the abusers. You're astute enough to know those folks who you're going to hear the same excuse all the time from. So
right.
You know what sort of demeanor those folks present. So
absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
Can I just ask Council one question here? If you turn to page 128, under monitoring fees, we left that blank. We didn't know if you had a particular number in mind. We do have a reinspection fee that Council approved a few years ago for inspections by the building department. It has, by having that additional reinspection fee of $50, it has cut down the number of return trips almost down to zero. I would like to suggest $50, but if you have a different number you'd like to put in here, we could certainly look at that. This is, again, a monitoring fee that once something has been identified, again, I'll go back to Marion Street because this has been going on for years, and every time then we have to keep going back to go ahead and reintroduce this issue, that'd be another $50. And that's, in our opinion, the only way we're going to get people to take this seriously to maintain the properties. So that would be my suggestion, but if we left it blank, not knowing what you may want here.
Mr. Mayor, I'll move to amend the motion to add the $50, insert $50 in that section.
Second. Okay. Any other comment? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Very good.
That was on
good job.
Point of order. We voted on the amendment, and don't we have to vote on ours and all in one? Are you happy?
Everybody was concurring with the $50 amendment.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
You had a motion.
Yes. You're happy. We're happy.
Okay. All right. Ben, thank you for your work on this, and whoever else worked on it with you.
So we don't do the main motion?
Yes. Okay, item 5, resolution authorizing water service to property on Highway 19 and Croft Mill Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is a resolution. Under a resolution, when there's a request for a city service, in this case water, City Council can make whatever arrangement they want, because this is a contractual type of sales to the individuals out here. In this pure case, the owner of a proposed Dollar General store would like to go ahead and have water at this 1.3-acre site at Croft Mill Road and US 19. The Planning Commission heard the request
and on a 4-2 vote, they approved it. The major reason two individuals vote against it was there was some question on what type of access they should have on Croft Mill Road, how many parking lot spaces should or should not be eliminated based on that particular area. Let me read through the conditions, and I know that the developer is in the audience, that they could then answer any questions here concerning these three parking stalls and possibly any of the other conditions. Number one, that an executed agreement on the provisions of city service listing conditions of approval be recorded within 90 days. That the city engineer approve the water system. Three, that the project comply with the city landscape and tree provisions. Four, that the project comply with the city sign regulations. Five, that the project complies with the access management provisions. Six, that the right-in, right-out access on a 19 include a raised median larger than typical median to prevent left turns. That's probably one of the more critical areas. We've had this same situation at Walgreens and other particular locations to make sure that people are not turning left and trying to go in the northbound when they could turn onto Croft Mill and go to a traffic light. Seven, that the proposed deceleration lane on South Carolina 19 be required. The traffic engineer did not feel it was necessary, but the developer wants to have a decel lane going into this development, so he asked that be made as a requirement. That there be two exit lanes onto Croft Mill Road, and that the three parking stalls closest to Croft Mill Road be eliminated. And that's one of the areas of concern on their part. That the exterior principal building of the subject be a brick, red, comparable colors, and that yellow, orange, or other bright colors not be allowed. That all the wiring be underground and the conditions be met prior to opening of any business. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of resolution authorizing city water to property at Highway 19 at Croft Mill Road. And Beverly Clyburn has...
I was going to say, Ms. Clyburn has left the room. Her husband, Mr. Bill Clyburn, is the owner of the property that's being sold to the developer. She has filed her ethics conflict of interest statement, and she is not participating in this deliberation.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Would the developer or anyone else concerned with this like to speak?
Good evening. My name is Bo Oglesby, 2525 Broad Street, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thank you for hearing our request this evening. We have been meeting with the planning department, I believe since December, possibly on this, and the 11 conditions that were laid out by the Planning Commission, we have agreed to all of them. We were able to work with the county planning department to ask them to revise their parking requirements, and they handled that on an expedited basis for us. So we are fine with all 11 of these conditions, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Well, that's very good. That's a good start. Any questions, comments?
So moved the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we've got second. No comment. No discussion. Okay. All in favor? Show of hands. Okay. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item six, Cracker Barrel Development Agreement. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is a little bit unusual in that typically you would get a developer's agreement brought to you at the time of a rezoning or annexation or something of that particular nature. The developer, Cracker Barrel, has been working with the City of Aiken for the last couple of years at this particular area of town. And because there were so many elements within this agreement, we wanted to get this to you at this present time before they actually start the annexation process. There are actually two different properties that they would be annexing. One is the property that you would now consider being Rick's Produce. Rick's Produce has one entrance on to Whiskey Road currently. And then next to Rick's Produce is a, it's not really a place, well, it's where they clean up cars, wash cars, but it's not an automated type of an operation. And there are several other businesses in there prior to that. There are two driveway entrances to that location. One of the requirements we had discussed with Cracker Barrel is that they would have only one entrance. In other words, they'd take the three that are currently there now, and that'd be narrowed down to one entrance. But we also felt they needed to have a second entrance. In 2004, the voters of Aiken County approved funding to provide a road that will, in the future, go from Eastgate Drive all the way to Powder House Road. We call this the Powder House Road Connection. A committee of nine individuals, three city, three county, and three citizens at large, decided that this is where the road would eventually be placed. And therefore, we put in the current referendum funding to begin that road. That is one of the reasons why we purchased the ARC property about a year and a half ago, with the idea that the road would begin at that particular location. The property where the road would be going in would have to align itself up with Eastgate Drive. One of the conditions would be that the city would put in the initial portion of this road where it would tie back into Oak Grove. It would be a three-lane section, one lane going in, two lanes going out. One lane going out would be for left turns. The other lane going out would be for through and right turn movement. There would also be some connections into the Tire Kingdom and any other driveways that would currently be connected onto Oak Grove, because the intention would be to take the current Oak Grove Road and to abandon it from Whiskey Road back to where this road would be tying in. And again, this would be the beginning of where this new road would be going, all the way to Powder House Road. Within the agreement, first of all, we do have the funding because of the once on sales tax to build this portion of roadway. So the funding has already been set aside through that once on sales tax for this first portion. Within this also would be the realignment of Athol Avenue. Athol right now is a county road. It would be realigned. A certain portion of that was part of our purchase from John George. Cracker Barrel would be paying us based on that square footage price that we paid for that property, because they need a section. And if you look at Exhibit A, that I'm sorry was not in your agenda package. That was an oversight on our part. But there's a cross-sectioned area that they would be purchasing towards Athol Avenue. They would be contributing their pro rata share towards the storm drainage in the detention pond. There is enough space currently in the detention pond. We wouldn't have to do anything at this point in time to the George's Pond. Obviously, in the future, we're going to be enlarging it for other property, but at this point, there is enough space within that area. Currently, most of the water from Athol Avenue is draining towards Whiskey Road. Some of that property drains back towards George's Pond, but most of it is draining towards Whiskey. That would be picked up in a piping system and directed back towards the pond. That ditch that's in front would also be filled in. The streetscape component that we have for any new development along Whiskey Road would be filling in the ditch and providing a sidewalk, which we are providing to the area to the north of there. The big area that delayed this for a couple years coming to the city of Aiken was the fact that there's a rather large billboard in the middle of the property. They have agreed in this agreement to remove that billboard prior to the opening of their store. So tonight we have representative here from Cracker Barrel who is willing to answer any of your questions. This is not a vote tonight on this agreement, but again, it's a presentation so that if there were some areas that you would like changed, modified, whatever else before they would go and take the next step, we could go ahead and do this. It will come back as a formal agreement more than likely in December or January, depending on the length of process for the annexation of this property through the Planning Commission. So with that, Mr. Mayor, Council. Okay.
Do we have the representative would you like to speak? Okay.
Good evening. My name is Joe James, and I'm here on behalf of Cracker Barrel Country Store. And I'll be as brief as I possibly can this evening. Mr. LeDuc has done a tremendous job in explaining this monstrous agreement that we've crafted out here for the development agreement. As Mr. LeDuc stated, we've looked in Aiken over the past 10 years or so at various pieces of property, and for one reason or another, they've just not worked out. Over the past 2 years, we've really zeroed in on this property, Rick's Produce. We've worked with Jefferson Murray, our landlord there, to craft a lease agreement that we can live with. Worked with city staff on this development agreement that we'll be speaking about. And then last but not least, the billboard buyout agreement. We've worked with the billboard company to arrange a buyout before we would construct our store there. So this particular property is a little unique in the fact that as we analyze the market, we feel that this is a very centralized location for the residents of the city of Aiken as far as a retail corridor. And with this uniqueness, there's a lack of, I guess the best way to say it, the property's not being utilized to its highest and best use at this current time. We feel that we can come in and improve that property. But along with those improvements, it takes several steps. Those steps are outlined in this development agreement. You've got a road construction, a road relocation, got a construction of a stormwater pond, sewer extension, and the removal of the billboard. We went to great lengths over the past year or so in this development agreement to detail out who is responsible for what and when. So without going into complete details and reading the agreement, which I know you've had in your possession, I'll be glad to attempt to answer any questions you might have about the agreement.
Okay. Joe, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any comments?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. One is, first of all, thank you for bringing the business to Aiken. And as we talked about earlier, Ms. Price had mentioned we're looking for jobs everywhere. So thanks for coming to Aiken. The other thing, and I had this is a city-related item. We had Mr. Ledoux and Mr. Morris and I discussed about the light, signal light situation there. So you're going to look into that to be sure we get that taken care of as the new lights go in. And you didn't mention that, but I'm sure you'll take a look.
This is a totally unrelated to
Cracker
Barrel.
It's unrelated to that, but we need to do it.
We'll be talking at the very end of the meeting about the traffic signal system. Obviously, as we build a new road in here, we're going to want to have traffic heads facing that direction.
Yes.
And if we can, we're going to get the company that's currently out there to put another pole and put the underground wiring to have this all in place, you know, so that we don't 6 months, 9 months from now after the project's over, then go back and try to get it done. So assuming this all goes forward with City Council, then we're moving in that direction.
Yes, and that is a city issue, but nevertheless, they're just fixing to put these lights in so we can get the basics done. It would be helpful. And the other, and it's a comment in relation to the a couple of things we've had and proposed in September and July, and now this is all coming into the city. Do we have any issues with county-city interface like we've run into a couple of times with parking or zoning issues?
None.
Okay, so Planning Commission shouldn't have any problem or issues with that as we go through this.
When we annex this property, we'll be annexing the property where the pond is that we just personally purchased just recently.
Okay, and so all of that is clear and we can follow his schedule and make it and everything. Very good. Thank you.
I just have a couple of questions. As I understand it, one of the main entrances will be off of Whiskey. And then the other entrance will be off of the new Eastgate. Is that going to be called Eastgate Drive on that side?
We were talking about that today, you know, what the name would be. We kiddingly said for the right price we could even name it Cracker Barrel Drive.
Duke Boulevard?
But, you know, right now, whether it's going to be called the Powder House Connector or Oak Grove or Eastgate Drive, that'll have to be determined at a later date.
Okay, but that's the second entrance. And
that is correct.
That's in and out at both places.
That is correct.
Okay. When you pave, let's call it the new Eastgate Drive, not that that's going to be what it is, that will be paved from Whiskey Road up to where Oak Grove Road is at the back of the property, sort of to the left of the word Thee at the triangle
point? That is correct.
Okay. And then when we do Athol, we'll be paving that, obviously, all behind the property. And how far up
where the property or where the driveway currently ends back there, on that property is where the paving would stop. So there's a driveway off the back
entrance. There's three entrances and exits then. Okay.
Where it says location of rear entrance drive, that's where the paving would stop.
Okay, and then it'll return to a dirt road. Okay. The other question is, you indicated that, or the development agreement seems to say that we have to install the detention pond.
We would be providing detention. In other words, instead of them having an on-site detention, which typically you find at most businesses, they'll have an off-site detention area, which we're providing, and then they'll pay their pro rata share of whatever that cost is based on the size of their property.
Okay, and I thought we were going to do a retention pond with that George property.
It starts detention? We interchange it as retention, detention, but it's going to be a retention pond.
Okay, and you're happy with all of the requirements on the part of the city?
Yes.
Okay, that's all I have now. Thank you. Thank you.
Do we need any kind of action to say that we are happy with it tonight and let it be sure it
proceeds forward? No, I think just by your comments and questions will allow us to see what changes, you know, and duly note it. We need to be looking at the traffic signals for the future. And we just want to make sure that everything was fairly clear within the agreement, that if there is something that needs to have more clarity, that we could bring that forward to you at the proper time.
Thank you.
I think it looks good, and thank you for coming to Aiken.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay.
Joe, before you leave, I hate to bring this up, but what does the traffic look like to you? Obviously, that's the central point. I understand why you want to be there. What do you think about the traffic along that stretch?
You know, Mr. Mayor, we're going to conduct a traffic study to really understand that and the full implications. I can tell you from a system-wide standpoint as far as our flow and how our business is conducted at different times of the day.
Right.
It's going to be a little shocking to say this, but we're known as a breakfast company. That's about 20% of our business. 40% lunch, 40% dinner. Mm-hmm. So it's a little more, you know, skewed toward lunch and dinner than most people would think as far as breakfast. But we do have 3 day parts that we serve. So, you know, you will see traffic flow throughout. And as far as peak hours within that, you're going to see breakfast mainly between 7 and 8 a.m. during the week.
Yeah.
It's normal lunch hours, you know, between 11:30 and 1:30. And the dinner business between 5:30 to 7:30 would be the
right
peak hours. And then weekends, you know, a little more skewed, as most people are off work during the weekend.
Right. A 24/7 operation?
No, sir. We're open till 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 11 p.m. on Fridays and Saturday, and open all days at 6 a.m.
Okay. Well, I just want to say my car automatically goes into a Cracker Barrel no matter where I am. I love Cracker Barrel, but I just thought we ought to talk about that and at least get that on the table. And it doesn't appear that it's going to be a major problem, I don't think, especially when we get the road. And, you know, and the road going all the way over to Powder House or north to Centennial Park, which would be the first phase of that road that we get in. A lot of that depends on getting a little extra funds.
Right. And I agree with you. With the current design of the road, it's already designed to carry a good amount of traffic on this future East Gate Road. That's already designed to carry quite a bit of traffic in there from what I can tell here.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just for council's edification, eventually that roadway called the East Gate Drive Extension will be 5 lanes. Well, there'll be 2 lanes going eastbound, 2 lanes going westbound, and with a turn lane in there. So right now it'll be 3 lanes until it gets completed, and there won't be curb and gutter on either side, and that way we can modify it and to widen it at a later date.
But there's no plans to design the connector road, what we call a Powder House connector road, beyond what's needed for this project.
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. You've got everything you...
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Okay. Item 7, approval of the city court judge.
A number of years ago, we had an a main associate-type judge and then an assistant judge, both having the same role. When we hired Tracy Carroll to replace Judge Simons a few years ago, we decided to try a variety of individuals to sit in when she was not available. It's worked semi-well, but many times she would be letting us know at the, with only a day or 2 days' notice, sometimes a week's notice, and we couldn't always get someone in. And you have to understand, when our officers write tickets, they're writing the ticket saying that you will have a court date 2 weeks or a month ahead of time, and then if the court's canceled that day, it adds a lot of confusion. We felt that we're at the point where we need to go ahead and have an associate judge to work with Tracy Carroll. We advertised it, got a number of people coming in. We interviewed and felt that the best individual to help work with her is Mr. Pat Sullivan. Pat Sullivan is already a judge with Aiken County, just like Tracy Carroll is. Therefore, the training is not necessary because he has all the proper training through the state and the licensing that goes with it. He's very familiar with our system, just like Tracy was, so there's no ramping up to get involved. And we already have, the way we pay Judge Carroll now is through the county. So we send a check to the county, and the county then takes that money and pays her, because she is on the payroll of the county. So we have a working relationship with Aiken County on that. We'd be doing the same thing with Judge Sullivan. So our recommendation to you tonight is to approve the appointment of Judge Pat Sullivan to assist in the absence of our current judge whenever necessary.
Okay, thank you, sir. There was a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I know Judge Sullivan, and I'm pleased that he passed the process, and I would proudly move that we appoint him as city judge.
All right. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Number nine, strategic plan data.
We have the annual report.
What did I do? I skipped one.
Annual report.
In a hurry. Okay, the annual report for fiscal 09 to 10.
Every year, staff spends a lot of time in putting together this annual report. I'm sure you've all read through it. There's only about 250 pages here over the weekend. So I could answer any questions you have on any particular page. I'm only kidding. There is a lot of information, a wealth of information. As I was reading through it, and I had several weeks to read through it, so I learned a lot of things, and I should know pretty much all these things already, but there was a number of facts that I was not aware of. A couple of things I think that of note is the fact that the serious crime in the city of Aiken was reduced by 8.7%. So even during what we felt might be a very difficult year due to unemployment and other factors, we were able to reduce serious crime by 8.7%. Also very interestingly, that the number of times we actually keep track of how many times our officer has contact with a citizen or a business, and we record that, the number of contacts we've made or personal face-to-face times went up almost 15% this past year. The number of calls that we received from at our 911 center went up 8.4%. So those things went up, but our serious crime went down. The other thing that I felt in public safety that was very significant was the number of accidents actually decreased by 6%, which is pretty significant. Now, you may ask the question, how's that happen? The heat patrol, which is two individuals working 40 hours a week in little black vehicles. My daughter says every time she sees one behind her, she starts to shake. I ask her why. She shouldn't have to, but they wrote 4,000 tickets last year. Those two alone, plus other officers, wrote other tickets. Well, knowing that there is enforcement within our community and that we're trying to keep people driving at the proper speeds and doing the right things, we feel is a direct correlation with why the accidents are down inside of our city. Another little known fact is last year the Independent Softball Association recognized Citizens Park as the premier or the number one facility in the United States. So that complex out there was considered, I mean, we're talking about New York, Los Angeles, and everything in between, and we were recognized as the number one fields in the United States. And for that reason, they are bringing this month the World Series here to Aiken for the Independent Softball Association. You know, a great kudos to the Recreation Department and City Council back in the mid-90s to have that park. You know, I read in the talk back a few times people complaining about a $10 fee for having their dog be able to go to a dog park. Well, that was opened up this year. We provided some money to the SPCA. The SPCA maintains that, and so they take that $10 to go ahead and maintain the grass out there, to go maintain that facility. And so it's not a jet revenue generator for them, but it helps them maintain that facility. We looked at nationally what was the turnover rate in the United States, and this goes back to the fact that we just have a very strong government here where our employees feel very satisfied with their place of work. 16.3% was the national average. We were down at 7% for the number of employees that left the city of Aiken. We now have over 70% of our applications that we get in. Every one of them used to be by paper. Now 70% of them are by email. And we hope to increase that. Our finance department changed the way that we sold our salvage equipment and vehicles. It used to be we'd have an auctioneer come in, they would take a certain percentage of it every year, we'd have to go ahead and stockpile all these vehicles, and we'd generally get around $50,000 a year. Through using the internet, we've been able to sell equipment now, gets over $200,000 a year. So a great suggestion by our finance department. They've also increased the number of vendors that they pay by check. It used to be we had to write out a check. Now everything's done electronically, and that's gone from 160 to 260 businesses that we do that way. They also found by bulk mailing with an outside contract service, we could save 5% on all of our mailing. So it's those little things that add up, you know, as we get into this zero-based budgeting in a few weeks. I think you're going to find a number of things that the city's doing that is just really amazing. A lot of stuff in here, a lot of facts, a lot of information. I'd like to really thank the staff for everything they do. I think this is just a reflection on all the departments, on the city as a whole, as to what we have all been able to accomplish by working together and partnering with so many other people outside the city of Aiken. So thank you all.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Staff.
Roger, thank you for your leadership.
Couple of questions, Roger. Will this be available online?
I'm looking at it's. Yes. It has been in the past. So,
yeah. Okay. And
I'm not too. Is it? It's probably not there now.
It will be there tomorrow.
Yeah. We like to give it to council first, and then we'll put it online.
And the second question is: is there a way for someone, a citizen, to buy a hard copy of it if they don't want it online? I know it's a pretty thick document to be just handing out like our package, but I can imagine you're absolutely right. This thing is full of a lot of very interesting, fascinating information about the city, most of it good. But it would strike me that it would be a good document for some businesses and some people to have a hard copy of. Is there any way? Have we ever done that?
We've never had that request before, but we certainly could make that available if somebody would like so.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how much we charge. It'd be more than a dollar.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you. It's a great job.
Okay. Item 9, strategic plan data.
Yes, last time we updated our strategic plan, first of all, it was done in about 93, and then it was updated in 2000. We felt that it was very appropriate that the fact that when it was originally completed in 93, it had some short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals. its completion date was 2010, and even though we updated in 2000, this being our 175th year, we felt now was the proper time to go ahead and to redo our strategic plan. I asked Richard Pierce to head this project up. As most of you know, we had 5 meetings in the spring, then we had an online survey. This data has all been pulled together. We'd like to preliminarily present this to you tonight. There are a number of goals that are in here that if you agree with what we have, I mean, we could spend quite a bit of time talking about it, but if you agree to these goals in here, then Richard will go ahead and put some real meat onto the bone, so to speak, and give you some specifics for short-term, mid-term, and long-term like we've done in the past, and also recap of what we've had. So with that, this is the beginning. We know that we're going to have to come back to you in probably another month or so with those goals, but we want to get any comments you had, any direction that you'd like to take from this point, and Richard is here to make that presentation.
Roger, thank you, Mayor and Council. It's been quite a journey for us since we came to you at Horizons and talked about the fact that we would be doing the strategic plan update. You'll remember in the sleet and then snow and then the rain, back in March, we kicked off the strategic plan review and had the professors from Clemson and their students who shared some ideas. We took a kind of informal straw poll at that time. And then in March, April, and May, we had a series of public meetings. We held those at the Smith-Hazel Center, at the HO Week Center, here in this building, 3 different times. We met in the evening. I think the final meeting was a Saturday morning here. To publicize the public meetings, we put in the newsletter that went out to our 16,000 utility customers the schedule for the various meetings. We had great coverage in the local print media. And when we actually had the public meetings, we had several broadcast media who came out and interviewed the participants and interviewed the volunteers that participated. And in addition to the public meetings, we did have the online survey up for about a month and a half and took that down on June 4th. As you'll see from the materials we provided you, between the public meetings and that online survey, we had over 300 participants. And certainly folks that came to the public meeting could participate with the online survey. But in addition to the results from that data that was gathered that you'll hear from Liz Stewart tonight, I actually made a presentation to the Chamber's First Friday Means Business in April. That would have been the first Friday in April. And we actually did a mini charrette where we got input from the attendees at the breakfast. But prior to all of this, I had actually gone out with several community leaders and sat down and talked about Aiken, talked about their involvement in our past strategic plan initiatives, their work in the community. And several of you will remember that in 1992 you started the process that ended up with this book in 1994 that you called Our Ways of Life. And it is interesting, and you'll hear more from Liz in just a minute, but it is interesting that many of the issues that you were discussing in 1992 have carried through. And that's why in this most recent iteration of your strategic plan, we've kept the 4 cities, the green city, the family city, the business city, and the historic city, and compiled the information that way. The online survey was set up that way. We had 4 statements about those different areas. And once we gathered all the information just to make sure that we could identify the common threads from those different meetings, you'll hear Liz's compilation of the information we got from the chamber meeting, from the public community meeting, and then the online survey. There was a common thread through those, and I think broken out by the different cities, once Liz has given you her quantitative analysis, I'll come back up to the microphone. We can talk about the qualitative analysis of what we saw as potential areas for the strategic plan to include. So without any more delay, I'm going to ask Liz Stewart to come up with Stewart and Associates and talk about the numbers from the raw data that we gathered for them. Liz?
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, Mr. LeDuc, and Council. My role this evening is to share with you the results of the compilation of the data gathered during these sessions, and certainly to answer any questions you may have. The first thing I want to mention is the objectives of this project. We had three key objectives. First was to develop and conduct a facilitator training program. We customized a charrette-type training. There are more than 25 trainers which were prepared, and a lot of them were actually city employees, so you will be able to continue to use them in many different forms. And in fact, that did happen when we had the business sessions. The data was then compiled from both the community meetings and the individually submitted online surveys. And then we wanted to present the information in a formal report, hopefully to facilitate your process of updating the strategic plan. The demographics, as Richard had mentioned, we did have a number of meetings. I guess it's no surprise that today more people are using the online methodologies. The meetings were held throughout the city. They were held at various times, various days, and various locations, again, to facilitate participation. We did try to capture where the participants in the community meetings resided, and we did feel like there was a pretty good representation. A number of folks chose not to respond to that question during registration. That's why the numbers are a little bit lower. We then, as Richard indicated, stayed the same as has been done in the previous two reports with the business, the green, the family, and the historic cities. Now, in this distribution report, you can see that obviously the business community and the family community had the greatest number of responses. We then looked at the meeting responses by the business city and broke it down. And you can see that certainly there are certain areas, government being the predominant one, that really stands out. We then broke this down by the individual city. And you can see in here that environment and growth certainly ranked very high. In the family city, it was very strongly that the culture of our community be maintained. And interestingly, in both meeting and online, the only topic that was mentioned under historic city was preservation. So there's absolutely no question what your focus ought to be on that one. Then those folks who attended the meetings were asked to prioritize their responses. And this chart demonstrates that the business community had the largest number of short-term and intermediate-term priorities. And it was interesting that they had zero long-term priorities. We wanted to understand this a little bit better, so we broke it down in a different way as well. We took the different priorities, short-term, intermediate, and long-term, and looked at what the top three categories were for each one. For the short-term, the responses were in the categories of government, economy, and transportation. To really understand that a little bit further, we broke each one of those three categories down. So you will see that under government, the most important thing was the collaborative process. Then second, small business support, which has certainly been a focus recently, and city helpfulness. Under economy, maintaining a vibrant business community, Northside development, and employment in that order. And then the last one is transportation, and of course, by far, the most significant number of responses were in the category of traffic management, then road widening and maintenance, and streetscaping and road planning. Now, in the intermediate, the three again were government, transportation, and economy. But the subcategories under government were city-county cooperation, public-private partnerships, and city services. Under the economy, improved shopping and dining options was significantly higher, four times higher than any of the other numbers of responses. That was followed by small business support and employment opportunities. Now, in the long term, the culture, crime, and police, and neighborhoods were three primary categories of responses. Under the culture, by far the most significant topics were related to the ambiance of Aiken and the quality of life, then cultural events, and then being a community of inclusion. Under crime and police, public safety being proactive ranked high. Having a safe community and a low crime rate were the subcategories. And under neighborhoods, the number one thing was revitalization, then specific housing, then neighborhood schools. And you have, obviously, the complete report in your hands. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Liz, it looks like a good job. This is very detailed.
Thank you.
How do you feel just about the process we went through? You've done this a number of times, I'm sure, in your business.
Yes.
How do you feel about the process and everything that we went through to get this information?
I think the process was a very credible one. It's very defensible. The community meetings allowed a tremendous amount of opportunity for folks to provide their comments in a very discussion-based manner so that they could add to it, they could change. I think the idea of allowing the citizens to also contribute to prioritizing the goals is a very powerful metric. And the online survey was also very comprehensive and yielded a great deal of information. There were 16 basic questions on the online and two open-ended questions that yielded hundreds of responses. So people not only completed the survey, but they actually wrote in a tremendous amount of information. So I feel that we had a volume of information to work with.
Probably much more than we had back in 92. I recall the meeting downstairs with 300 people, and it was quite involved, and that was a good process at the time. But I don't think we did anything with the computer at that time.
Well,
don't recall that being a part of it, and that certainly allows people to
absolutely
say what they want to say from their home or wherever they want to be at the time.
Absolutely. So. There was certainly a great volume of information.
Great.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz.
The second part of our piece tonight, Mayor and members of council, are in my memo. We talked about the general areas of citizen concern, and that's what Liz just went over with you. So we broke out...
What page are you on?
I'm sorry, page 4 of my memo. It's actually page 200 of your agenda pack.
200, okay.
Anytime you do a strategic plan, Mayor, and in talking with the other cities that have gone through this process, and certainly in talking with the participants in our prior strategic planning back in 92, 94, and again in 2000, you tend to zoom out and talk about broad categories rather than specifics. Those tend to be the more helpful plans And that's why we developed these categories that you'll see on page 200 of the agenda packet. And then to break that out by city, we gave you examples. For instance, under the green city, the parkways came up over and over and over again. And those of you that attended the Sleep Fest at the 1st of March when we had the rollout with the folks from Clemson, one of the issues we talked about was connectivity. How do you get the parkways to become more of an amenity to the city? And it was seen as either having pathways through them so that they would actually connect one another and actually even go and connect all the way to either the hospital campus and the USCA campus, to have them more connected with downtown. So that's just one example of kind of a broad category that could become a short, intermediate, and long-term goal as we do the annual budgets for the city and phase in projects that would meet those strategic plan goals. There's a fairly comprehensive list here. We wanted to provide that to council, so we came back to you in October with more specific projects and even potential phases for those projects, but that would be the kind of direction that city council wanted to see us take. We didn't want to give you a whole bunch of information, say, well, why are we talking about pathways and the parkways? And again, all of these are citizen comment driven, not staff, not council. It's the folks who attended these public meetings that contributed. I didn't know if anyone, if there were any questions potentially about that shopping list, if you will, or comments.
Are there any goals that you see listed here, starting on page 201, that we wouldn't want to have in the strategic plan process? Starting on page 201 with Green City, you know, the next two pages then.
What does it mean that they're in the strategic plan, and what's the time frame?
They're kind of two different approaches, Councilmember DeWar. You know, in the past, you saw 5-year goals, 10-year goals, 15-year goals. The current, and when we did the 2000 update, they kind of did an update. Here's what we've accomplished since 1994. Here's what's yet to do. Here are new goals for 2001 through 2010. And we anticipate we come back in October actually having that inventory list of items completed, kind of ongoing projects, and then, you know, just items that didn't get completed for whatever reason. I can think of one example. In 2000, there was a press to connect the hospital ARMC campus with I-20, just a direct four-lane highway. Well, of course, that's SCDOT driven. That hasn't been built. But the current model that seems appealing, mainly because technology is so rapidly changing, it's hard to know, for example, you know, we all have personal data assistance on our belt now, and I don't think, Mayor, anybody saw that necessarily in 1994. So to kind of meet the changing technology, you can make the strategic plan a rolling plan where every year you revisit it, see what you've accomplished, see what your goals are, and use that as part of the budgeting cycle and your horizons retreat to kind of take stock and see where the resources need to be dedicated in that coming year. You have to have the long-term goal, because so many times we've taken on projects that are very large and we've had to phase those in.
Mr. Mayor, one comment. I discussed this a little bit with Richard already, but if I look at, and this is part of Ms. Stewart's report, if I look at page 213, 215, 217, and 219 of what's in our minutes, there's a definite trend, and these were the meetings where people were in the meetings. There's a definite trend where the government and culture are very important. And I think building on what Mr. Pierce has said, from what items are important to get there, there's obviously a lot of emphasis both in the culture and government, both today, and then the other one said, what do you not see working so well? The same items showed up there. And I thought that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. That we're doing a good job, but obviously we can do better. And I think that we need to be sure as we look at all this data that we pick up the good and the bad here. you know. And one of them is the, you know, the talking shop with the small businesses, and I think that came out loud and clear from the other meetings. But I think we need to roll these together into the what we, you know, in those particular areas, because that's what makes the city grow in the future. And that's just a comment.
And it's certainly the case that things that are going well, you could go back and trace to that 1994 plan. And that was something in going over this data and kind of gleaning the lessons from it. And just hearing comments after we did the public community meetings, there is a large segment of our population that is very happy with the way city government is being run, always seeing room for improvement, but very happy with the situation. And we got the comment initially, you know, well, gosh, we're all the people. We should have a lot of people at these meetings, shouldn't we? And, of course, we did the online survey, and folks tended to want to use that medium more so than the public meeting for the update. And it's not unreasonable to kind of glean from that there is a satisfaction level with the operation of local government that was borne out by, you know, independent surveys that have been done about city operation.
Now, what do you plan on bringing back to us in October, specifics?
That would be our plan. We would actually have goals for you to look at. What we want to do is publish a booklet to hand out at the birthday party on December 18th to show what we've done, what we heard from the public, and what goals are being developed, whether those are short-term, intermediate, or long-term goals.
Well, the two pages that Councilmember Ebner talked about, which were contradictory, what are you doing well, government? What are you doing not so well, government? Do we have specifics there?
Yes. I mean, we have every comment that we wrote down on the paper. What we tried to do in coming to you tonight is just kind of take the comments, and they relate to a topic. I mean, somebody may talk about animal control. They may talk about how their garbage is picked up. They may talk about potholes in the road. Some of that is government function, and some of that is actually City of Aiken government function.
But will we see the raw data?
Yes, we'll provide that with you when we establish the goals, just to show that back up. You may have several different goals that talk about communications. They may talk about fixing broken things, and you could see where a goal may incorporate those specific concerns into, you know, an action item that city government can take.
Will we get that data before you develop the goals, so that by the time we look at the goals you've developed, we will have seen the raw data and be able to make our own conclusions to see how they blend with yours?
Certainly, Councilmember DeWar, because this is something that City Council votes on, so we want that same information.
And that's a double-sorted question, because we did the same thing with the business community. We talked to the businesses, and unfortunately I wasn't able to attend, but hopefully we'll get the raw data that came from the people that went to that
Absolutely.
Presentation.
Just as Stewart and Associates prepare the report for this effort, we have USC preparing their report for that effort. So that information will be available. Absolutely a public document.
Okay, so for the strategic plan update, then your plan is to give us the raw data before you give us the goals as you've structured them.
Right, and where it's feasible and where we can, we'll try and refer you. There's this goal, and then we can refer you to what area that came from.
Yeah, because I think that's really important. We need to know where the people feel on certain things. I mean, it's not sufficient to say I'm happy with government or I'm not happy with government.
Right.
What is it that we really, specifically, what are we doing well and what are we not doing so well?
Exactly. And you'll see from the community meetings, and we have over 1,200 ideas that were given to us. And, you know, I would say the bulk of that information is very helpful, and it shows what we're doing well and what needed improvement. I mean, time and again, we had comments from the public about how well the city responded to concerns that they had, something that needed repair, just something that needed attention. And it actually came through that they were quite impressed with having access to the public officials. And when they contacted public officials, they got an answer. They weren't just sent down the line. They weren't referred out to something else. They actually got answers to their questions. So, yes, we're more than happy to provide it, and that's why we gathered that.
Okay.
And the whole reason we did the DOT system was just to make sure we didn't go off of a singular idea. Again, we look for common threads and what's, you know, seemed to be on folks' minds, regardless of where you were in the city, socioeconomic background, educational background, what have you. It was a common thread. That's what you'll see in the goals. So we bring that to you. It's what many different people had on their minds.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Thank you, Richard.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Liz, for your efforts.
Thank you, Liz.
And I certainly want to take this opportunity to thank Council for your support of the effort and to publicly thank all our volunteers who helped in the effort. It's like so many things we do, Mayor. One person can't do it. It just takes a whole team, and everybody stepped up in a very helpful way.
We sent them thank you letters, too, didn't we?
Yes, sir. I believe the Mayor signed those.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Just want to make sure. I know I signed them. I want to make sure they went out. Okay, Dick had mentioned earlier we had two. I'm sorry.
No, we have a cancer.
Oh my goodness! I'm sorry, these ladies.
It's okay.
Will you ever forgive me, please? Come on up. I'm so sorry. We do October Breast Cancer Month, and you sat there so patiently.
We were not letting you forgive.
I know. That's good. I'm glad.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. LeDuc, and all you council members, I'm Peggy Peach, and this is Irene Holly and Diane Hadley. We are representing all of our pink ribbonettes here, and we are here to obtain permission to tie pink ribbons around our city's lamp post for the month of October. And as you mentioned earlier, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we have grown from 4 volunteers to 50 plus, and we're getting new volunteers monthly. That's a good thing and a bad thing. We've worked very hard over the past years, and we finally obtained our tax exempt status about 2.5 years ago. And we were privileged to have Walmart present us with their third grant just this past weekend, so we feel very good about that. I have a few statistics here that I received from Michael Brazier, who is our community manager for the American Cancer Society. We had 2,820 women in the state of South Carolina diagnosed with breast cancer in 2009. With 640 deaths resulting. And in Aiken and the CSRA, we had approximately 504 individuals with 100 deaths resulting. So we have our work cut out for us. And as breast cancer survivors, let me say we especially thank you for starting all of your meetings with a prayer before each meeting. My husband and I were here for the
prayer rally
that you had here, 4 or 6 weeks ago. So we're behind you 100%. And we do thank you for letting us come and present this to you. And I think, would you like to say something about our team?
As an organization, we have no way of knowing who in our area is diagnosed with cancer, with breast cancer specifically, because of privacy issues. Mm-hmm. So we try to do everything that we can to put ourselves forward so that if someone is diagnosed or knows of someone who is diagnosed, they will know about us and the support and services that we provide. And one of the things that we're doing for the first time this year is having a pink tea on October the 9th. It's open to the public. There's no tickets. There's no charge. And the mayor has graciously agreed to come and attend, and it is on your calendar. And
did my wife put that on my calendar?
We do have connections.
I'll be there.
But we would like the entire council to attend. You all have an invitation that I passed out earlier, as well as anybody that's in attendance here. But that's just another way for us to let the community know that we exist. So if people do have this issue come up, they will know someone to contact, because we can't contact them. So this is our first annual tea, and we hope it won't be the last. But the pink ribbons that we're requesting tonight is just another way to make people aware of what October is and what we're all about.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to commend these women for their efforts to bring greater awareness to breast cancer. I've known Peggy for a long time. We have a long history with her family, but I just can't say thank you enough, and just applaud you for your faith and your method of just going about this in terms of creating a greater awareness again.
Absolutely. My mother had breast cancer as well, a couple times. So, absolutely. And we appreciate, as Leslie has said, we all appreciate what you're doing very much. And
do we need a motion for approval?
Yes,
if so,
we do.
I'd be pleased to make it.
Yes, we do.
Move that we approve this request for celebrating National Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. All in favor? Show of hands. Passes unanimously. Okay. And if you have a resolution that you'd like us to sign, and
we do, and it's on the way to your office.
Oh, okay. I tell you, I like this. I like this organization. I've always said, boy, if you want to get something done, I know who to work with, and who can get it done.
Thank you.
The ladies. Okay, thank you. Okay.
I just had a question on the traffic light system that we have downtown. I think I'm beginning to think my expectations were way too high. I can tell you that I'm not impatient when I wait 4 or 5 seconds before the light goes green and there's no other cars in sight. But my understanding was that we were going to use cameras, and that if you were at an intersection and there was no traffic, that the cameras would pick that up and change the signal rather quickly. And I don't seem to think that that's happening, and I just wanted to ask whether or not the cameras are there, and are we checking them, and is it working as we expected it to work?
The cameras are there, and our crews do check them. So if you have a specific intersection, just let us know, and we're that checking.
Yeah, I've experienced the same thing at a couple of particular intersections.
Now you know there are some intersections, like if you get caught in the middle, for instance, like out here at Newbury.
Newbury, park, yeah.
Yeah, where there's not a camera to pick you up if you get in the middle.
But when I go home, if I get down Park, sometimes I get down Park and I want to take a right on Chesterfield, and I get stopped at Newbury, but I'm on Park, and I don't see any other cars, shouldn't the light turn green pretty quickly?
Okay. If you're on Park Avenue, no, the camera is there on the side streets. You don't have cameras on Richland, or you don't have cameras on
Park. The answer is, Dick, that the way the system was set up was that Park and Richland had priority. So if you're going down Park Avenue and there's no traffic on Newbury, the light should stay green until there's traffic picked up on Newbury Street. And that is not happening at all those intersections at this point.
Well, if I could pipe in, I travel on Chesterfield and across Park a lot. First of all, I really have a problem with that no right turn on red coming off Chesterfield onto Park. It's a wide open intersection. There's really no reason why people shouldn't be allowed to turn right. Timing wise, I've come down on Chesterfield right next to the courthouse, and it's the red light is somewhere between 70 and 75 seconds. And I've sat there with no traffic at all on Park. If, just doing a rudimentary traffic count, The traffic on Chesterfield as it feeds off Whiskey is probably about 3 or 4 times the volume as the traffic crossing east and west on Park. I think the priority on those lights are set up wrong. The same thing happens if you're coming up on Newberry to cross Park. Now, Newberry and Park are just about equal as far as traffic. But why should one be 70 seconds and the other one be 20 to 23 seconds?
There again, all I can do is state sets those. I can call Carol Jones and ask him to come back and look at them.
I think probably your concerns. Can we draft a letter of concern to the from the city to the Department of Transportation to go revisit the timings on these traffic lights?
I thought when we put these new systems in that we controlled the timing.
No. All we do is keep it running. They feed all the information. All we do is tie a computer in to make sure what they put in there is still operating. Yeah, we can adjust. We don't adjust the timing.
Have they given you a list of the timing as it's set on all the intersections?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's all computerized. It's in a
I'd love to see that list.
But we don't have anyone trained to make changes?
Oh, we know how to do it. We're just not allowed to.
Okay, I thought that was one of the things that we were going to be allowed to
do. Yeah, I did too.
Now, all we do, they set the priorities and the timings. All we do is make sure those stay.
Okay, so if they don't, then what happens? Does somebody check that? Some short frequency?
We check those several times a month. We check them. And we make sure that the timings that the state set are still in order.
But Pete, my point is, who makes a change if they're not?
The state.
How do you communicate that?
Telephone.
Okay. Do they have to come down here and do it?
They come down here and do it.
I see that whole system is crazy. This is crazy.
It's not what I thought it was. I thought when we were getting the, I realize it's an analog system, but I was under the assumption that it would speed traffic up, and I'm not sure that I see much of a difference. And I also, I guess I didn't hear what I should have heard, but I thought when it was done that we would have the controls over.
They put the timing in there. We just make sure the timing they put in there stays as they put it.
Then I guess I'll agree that it was money not well spent.
Well, based on what Councilmember Homolke said, we could certainly write a letter to the state asking them to recheck, not are the controllers working the way they are, but to reset the timing to get more green time at certain intersections. But, one of the things you brought up, Dick, is the fact that you're getting a red light when there's no traffic coming the other direction, and that's not the way it was set up. It was meant to be set up so that there were cameras so that it would change very quickly, and it was working that way initially, but lately I see that so we may have some cameras out there that are not working properly.
We hadn't had anything brought to our attention so tonight.
Well, I can't resist the comment that I haven't made in a long time, but it would be nice to have a traffic management engineer on staff.
Yeah, your officers.
But we have the authority to change it. The problem is not what we have. Basically, if the state reserves the right to change the timing, it's not going to do us any good to have a traffic engineer. I mean, as much as I agree with you on that.
Well, a traffic engineer should have no more credibility than our chief of police to call the state and say, hey, look, this is not working right.
But, and Roger Dyer does have good communication with them.
Yeah.
So if we have a problem, we can most definitely get him to go look at it and give us some recommendations.
Yeah. And then we send it to the state.
Yeah, I think we just need to look at it. Now, let's go to the second question that I had.
May I mention an intersection?
Sure.
Would you check Williamsburg Street near the Farmer's Market, the light before the Farmer's Market and the light
on the Park Avenue side or Richland Avenue?
The one on Park Avenue and the one on Richland, both of them need to be adjusted some kind of way. Because, I mean, even in the middle of the night, when there's no cars going, you're stuck with that.
Of course, those are separate standalone lights. They're not tied in with
anything. Well, something needs to be done because I could take a right turn on Richland, go up to the next block, and come back up, and the light's still green, and then I turn right back again to go on Williamsburg Street. And I look behind me sometimes, and I see it, and it's still red for that light.
Okay.
So, you know.
Well, yeah, if we could get something back from staff.
Well, the question is, how did we convey to South Carolina Transportation that we didn't quite like their scheme for left turn arrows and what have you? How was that brought about? Did we send a letter, or did
we
how did we make them aware to yank the system?
Letters, of course. You're talking about at the time they were installing, and
yes.
It's just basically day-to-day conversation. I mean, they had people here every day. You know, they set up the new system. They saw we didn't like it. They kept changing. Phone calls, meetings. Some of the representatives got involved, and then they made the change to.
Perhaps it's the same engineer that designed that system that decided which lights are going to be on red for how long.
Well, they were here. They made a.
They hired a company.
It seems like what we really need is we need to know what's going on with all the intersections on a timely basis to get the information back to them. I mean, Steve's got some things, Dick's got some things, I've got some things. All of us probably have two or three intersections that we could report. How can we best collect that information? Because we don't want them to come down here and work on two intersections and go home. And then there's others that still need work, too. On the other hand, you don't want them to come down here and check every intersection if it doesn't need to be checked.
Probably the best way to do it is Roger Dyer, our engineer, let him come and look at it.
Someone has to ride through the intersections. And you've got officers out there all the time. And don't they have to stop also? I know that this is not one of their chief jobs, but they're out there all the time going through all these intersections. And perhaps if they could, they have to stop, and they wait too, you know, presumably.
No, they learn how to avoid them. Just go.
Well, then we need to find out the ones they had to avoid, because those are the ones that need help. But seriously, somehow we need to. I mean, we'll never get anywhere if they come down here and do something. I think each of us would probably have these in our mind, and they hadn't been a big enough priority to say anything about it.
Me to talk to you about it.
Well, my solution has been, and not that I'm always in a hurry, but. When no one is behind me and I think that the 5 minutes wait is too long, 5 seconds wait is too long, I'll just back my car up a little bit and back forward. They're synchronized so that it turns and I'm going through. Yeah.
Well, some of them are not synchronized like that.
What if
the other intersection on the south side that I've complained to the city manager with no satisfaction whatsoever is Hitchcock Way and Whiskey. I hear a lot of folks in Aiken Estates complain about how long it... Now, obviously, the priority has got to go with Whiskey, but, I mean, for 90 and 120 seconds or whatever that light is set. But,
hopefully, that's going to change with the new lighting.
Speaking of which...
That's the next item.
How are we coming with the new system? Are we going to get that in before the holidays, or are we going to...
They're saying before November.
Before November. So we won't take defer it for a couple months. Okay, good.
And they are. They're moving very quick on it.
And that is a digital system?
I'm not sure.
The system will be totally camera activated.
Okay.
Whereas this one downtown, it's a real... mixture.
Yeah. Well, it is a digital system, the one that's being put in.
So.
And it's going, all the way from South Boundary? Is it going up to Brookhaven?
It is going all the way down to Powderhouse Road.
Oh, okay.
And includes Powderhouse.
And includes the signals east and west of Whiskey Road. So the one at Pawnee Drive where the Kroger's is at, okay. And the other one by the schools. On the east of Pine Lake.
And so. Is it going up Silver Bluff at all?
Well, those two on Silver Bluff.
Just those two, yeah. Okay.
Just those two signals.
All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Oh,
okay.
Just for the record, so you're aware, the intersection at South Boundary and Whiskey is just as bad. I sat there over a minute and a quarter waiting and you know, there's really less traffic on South Boundary than there is on Whiskey. And I've noticed, you know, we kind of made light of some of the red lights here, but I travel Whiskey up and down, and I've noticed an increase in backup in traffic, which is not necessarily an indication of more traffic. I just think it's an impediment because there's more traffic lights now. There's one by the, the Grace, then there's one up beyond that, and then there's
Dupree and Barry.
Yeah, and and Barry. And I think some of those lights are actually an impediment to traffic flow. And, you know, you drive south on Whiskey and you'll see like 15, 20, 30 cars sitting there, and they hit the intersection at South Boundary, and, you know, they can't get all through, you know. I mean,
there again, those lights right now, they're all independent of each other, and once they get the new system in, they're all be talking to each other.
And one of the things, if you hadn't noticed it, if you're heading northbound on Whiskey Road, there's a left-hand turn lane with a left-turn arrow at South Boundary. That used to be activated only when cars were there. Now it's activated all the time, whether there's cars there or not, because of the paving that took place a month or so ago. So they have to cut in new loops at all those various intersections, which is one of the reasons why things have slowed down, because there's no loop activation anymore at any of those intersections due to the paving. So they're out there today cutting loops in.
Yeah, they've been in town now for about a week and a half. Mostly at nighttime, they've been cutting in loops all over town. Whiskey Road, Silver Bluff and Daugherty has been messed up pretty bad, and Richland Avenue. So they've been cutting in new loops. Basically, without the loops, the lights just have a sequence system they follow. Once they have loops, well, then they actually detect cars, and they change based on cars being there or not being there.
And that's what they need to do at Newberry Street and Park Avenue. Remember, they were put loops in, but they never have.
They probably need to put loops in.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, before you close, on another note, Mr. Winfield brought something to my attention here. I'm seeing him in the audience. Did we ever get his signs, the signs out?
We have two signs up, Martin Luther.
No. Yes. Okay.
We'll talk about it. I talked to him before the meeting, and he's going to come see me sometime
okay.
this week.
Okay.
There is a sign where the old laundromat used to be on Long
Street. Okay.
Yeah, there's one right off Hampton Avenue, and then there's one on 19 as you're coming in out by the grocery store.
Okay.
One in Balltown, right there at Balltown.
We were supposed to have one northbound at South Boundary.
Right. They promised me they would do it, but we're to the point we'll probably be making it.
Okay.
Okay. We'll talk then.
Okay, Councilor, we need to vote to go into executive session. We've got a personnel matter.
Mr. Mayor, I move we go into executive session.
Okay. Second. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously.
I didn't want to link the conversation. That's fine. Just keep going with the.